on the download. From Heritage Bicycles, Michael Salvatore. Chicago hip-hop artist, Johnny Jones. And our resident philosopher, Al Genie. Now, here's your host, a man who is dreaming of a white St. Patrick's Day, Justin Kaufman.
That came out wrong. Dreaming of a snowy St. Patrick's Day. Hey, everybody, it's a download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's until 11 o'clock tonight here on the big show. Excited. We got a great show, jam packed. I feel like sometimes when we have White Sox baseball, like last night, we got Hawks coming up on Thursday, that we will shoehorn as much as we possibly can into a download on these truncated weeks. And this is no exception tonight. Coming up in the 7:30 segment, we're going to talk the download on Chicago business. Michael Salvatore is going to join us. He is the man behind Heritage Bicycles, Heritage Bikes General Store. This is he's a rock star when it comes to small business owners in Chicago. And to have him on the show to talk about what he's done for cycling, but also what he's done for small business, this idea of being the center of a community, to not just be a bike shop, but he makes a, and this is very interesting as well, the first custom-made Chicago-manufactured bicycle since Schwinn left this town back in the 70s. How about that? Heritage Bicycles will be on tonight in the 7:30 hour. 8 o'clock tonight, promo's been running all day. I've been getting a lot of people asking about it, but we're going to talk about aging, the act of aging, how to grow older without being old. Our resident philosopher, Al Genie, back in the building. Excited to talk about the great thinkers and philosophers of our time, how they have approached in their writings aging. Obviously, they're not Ryan Pace over at the Bears. He doesn't believe in anyone over 30. But we'll talk with Al Genie about the philosophy of aging and what you can do to age happily, I guess would be the question or the answer. It's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in on that conversation. In the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Jerry Brennan, who is the publisher, the owner of Tortoise Books. This is great. Jerry was a writer, Chicago writer, Columbia College student, who went through the rigmarole of what it takes to go through the traditional publishing industry. If you're familiar at all, if you're a writer or know anyone who's a writer, it's a slog to find representation and to pitch your projects and your writings to the New York publishing industry, only to hear nothing back. It really is. The horror stories are relentless when it comes to writers and, of course, their experiences. So we'll talk with Jerry, who decided to break out on his own. He's a disruptor in his own right. Made Tortoise Books to help writers publish their work without having to go through the big dogs. And we'll talk with Jerry about, and what I really like about it is he is very transparent about the process. He just went to the writers' conference just this past week and blogged about all that goes into it from a business standpoint, essentially putting out everything on his website about what it means to have a table at the conference, how much it costs, how much they brought in, how much they're paying the writers, all the kind of stuff that usually these companies don't like to talk about. Jerry does. So we'll talk with him coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Johnny Jones will join us, young Chicago hip-hop artist who just signed with Closed Sessions Records. I mean, this is great. Closed Sessions is a great spot. Kwaku Collins is over there. A lot of other great artists in Chicago. Johnny Jones, who was the artist that was represented on the Chicago Columbia College label. They have a label that they do, and you could take the class and be part of it, and you choose an artist to represent. Johnny Jones was that artist. But we will talk to him about his new album, Cocoons, which is out. I'm looking forward to talking to a Johnny Jones tonight, Chicago kid. And we'll play the worst tonight, coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Amy Sumter and Chris Churchill. Love Churchill. One of my faves. Churchill came in here a couple times. He's as close to a regular as you get. I think he's coming to the five-timers club. He's getting close over the 3 years' time of this show. You got the five-timers clubs, and I think the Churchill's getting close. We may have to look into that.
Does he get a jacket of some sort?
He does. He gets a jacket. It's embroidered. It's mm-hmm. like hundreds of dollars. It's a Canadian goose.
Oh.
Yeah, right out of my own pocket. I mean, I took it. Someone left it on a chair upstairs. And then I took a marker and I wrote the download on the back in really shoddy handwriting. But still, it's a jacket. It's a download jacket. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Eric Rung and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a first break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout, so stay with us. It's The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. Rex Tillerson out as Secretary of State, among a flurry of moves at the White House, which is really, Tillerson, the complete opposite of surprising since this was teed up for months. Tillerson was a former oil baron running our foreign policy, so I wasn't really crazy about the pick to begin with. But he did a pretty good job of being respectful of the job and respectful of other countries, or at least playing the straight man to President Trump. But the president wanted more or something else or lost a bet. I don't know. And the press said he wanted to drain the swamp. It just seems that maybe he meant his own swamp on his own property. If this were The Apprentice, all that would be left would be Ivanka and the ghost of Joan Rivers. Tillerson was fired by tweet, I guess. The last thing he did, last night he criticized Russia and said they were responsible for the recent poisoning of the spy in Britain. Come on. Come on, Trump. Can't you at least make it seem like you're not influenced by Putin? Just a little bit. Just pretend. Or at least wait a day or two so it's not coincidental. It's just, I think he knows it's coincidental. He's just toying with everybody. Thanks. Governor Rauner vetoed the recent gun control measure passed by the General Assembly. This was specifically about adding more to the licensing process to try and shore up straw purchases and the like. The Chicago police really wanted this because they say that most of the guns they pick up on the streets are bought and sold in loopholes, and the gun licensing measure would close said loopholes. But the governor said no and instead is following the party line that the way to safety is not by limiting guns by adding more, but by adding more, i.e. school administrators and teachers. The mayor of Chicago came out quick with a nice poetic line saying the governor has put his primary election ahead of his primary responsibility to protect the people. Wow. Damn. If the mayor doesn't get reelected next year, how about Poet Laureate? The primary is 1 week away, and in the state of Illinois, how about that, huh? 1 week. All the state and county offices are up, as well as U.S. House races, then some water reclamation districts, then some judges, and blah, blah, blah. So go to the polls and get to three or four offices, and then you'll be guessing the rest, right? That's the American way. Do what I do when you get into a secretive voting booth and you get to a race you're unfamiliar with. Just shout to the election judges, who are we going with in the 7th? Really lightens the mood. Guys got a pick for Secretary of State? Anybody? Why so quiet? Kids are walking out all over the country tomorrow from school. And here in Chicago as well, this to protest gun violence and what they say is a lack of government action over the issue. In Chicago, some planned protests were met with administrators threatening action or worse, detention for their 17 minutes of protest. Though, is there any better detention than a principled detention? I mean, as a frequent visitor myself to the detention area, mine were usually for talking back, clowning around, or being late, right? This, it's good. I mean, unfortunately, those kids who protest, they're going to get so beat up by the real troublemakers. They get detention, they're going to show up, and it's just going to be like, oh, you're not a real troublemaker. You're a principled troublemaker. Cool Chicago music news today. Lauryn Hill was announced to be the headliner at Pitchfork this year. How about that? She'll be performing her Miseducation of Lauryn Hill record for its 20th anniversary. 20 years since that record. I'm officially at the point where 20-year anniversaries don't remind me of my childhood anymore. Now it's like, wow, yeah, I had that album, and I also remember paying rent and bills and having to go to work while listening to it. I think I still have the same clothes. Yeah. In weather? Yeah. Snowed a little. In sports, oh man, I've been just waiting to talk about this, right? The Bears have started free agency with a bang. Former Jag wide receiver Allen Robinson also played for the Jaguars. See what I did there? He intends he's going to, I mean, I guess he can't sign till tomorrow, but they've all, every free agent has essentially already said where they're going. He's going to sign for the Bears 3 years, $42 million. Robinson was the number one receiver on the market, and he's now the number one receiver on the Bears. This is a huge upgrade at a position that was only not only decimated by injuries, but decimated by lack of playmakers. But now the Bears have Robinson, they got Cam Meredith back, Kevin White, maybe, I think he's being cut, and Kendall Wright, and now former Falcon Taylor Gabriel joins the team as well. And the Bears aren't done. They're gonna sign Philly tight end Trey Burton. Burton's claim to fame is throwing that touchdown to Foles in the Super Bowl on the fourth down trick play. But many say he's a great fit for the new offensively minded Chicago Bears. And that may spell the end for Deion Sims as well. Not a huge fan of the Trey Burton signing. I gotta be honest. Backup tight end. May start, may play for depth. I don't know. And also the Bears are going to sign Cody Parkey, the former Dolphin kicker that was in the Pro Bowl a few years back with the Eagles. So to recap day one for the Bears, receiver coming off an ACL, speedy receiver who catches about 30 balls a year, one touchdown, and a backup tight end and a kicker who has had injury issues. 12-4. Although Adam Hogue yesterday, when he pointed out that there isn't a lot of free agent talent at outside linebacker, which is exactly where the Bears need the most help. They cut most of the guys they had, so they still are. There's a question mark about who's going to rush the quarterback. What, Trace Armstrong? Let's bring him back. Also, Adam told us that the Bears don't usually go for players over 30. Ageist much? Come on. Oldest player on the Bears is Kyle Long. I guess I understand that logic, but when I see the recent Super Bowls and the winners are guys like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Drew Brees, 5-11 tells me maybe some older players might be worth a look. Just saying. Anyway, funny aside, I've been following the Bears free agency on Twitter with the hashtag Bears, which is hilarious because hashtag Bears can mean football, animals, or something else completely different. Which is very startling when you're trying to find out if there's any movement on Malcolm Butler. Images and things, it's just not. So I would do hashtag Chicago Bears if I were you. But that's still... might get you something you don't want to see. The Vikings are going to sign Kirk Cousins. Case Keenum took him to the NFC Championship game, and now he's out. Signed with Denver. Everybody's all in on Kirk Cousins. Cousins may be the highest paid quarterback in the league now, and it's guaranteed money. Yeah, guaranteed to go 7-9. Holla! Why is everyone all in on Kirk Cousins? Anyway, the Packers signed tight end Jimmy Graham, who's so old that he only had 10 touchdowns last year. 10 touchdowns. Well, both Bears quarterbacks combined had 11, so take that, Jimmy Graham. It's ridiculous. The Cubs lost today to the Padres. Unacceptable. Still, they are atop the entire Cactus League. This team's stacked. The only thing that stands in their way, maybe a couple injuries or Schwarber eating too many Twinkies in the clubhouse. That's it. Bulls play the Clippers tonight. There are about 15 games left in the NBA schedule, and the Bulls are still in this thing. They only are about 5 games away from being the worst team in the league, so if they can focus, stick to the fundamentals, they may have a chance to lose out. One game at a time, guys. Starts tonight. Lose, baby. Just lose. And finally tonight, Let Us Entertain You is moving back to the Riverwalk. This is interesting. They're renovating the building at 321 Clark to add to the bustling and now sprawling Riverwalk development. Let Us Entertain You, of course, is Rich Melman and the people behind some of the most known restaurants in Chicago, from Maggiano's to Bub City. No word on what will be in this space, but if it were me, I'd call the restaurant Old Riverwalk and just theme it to be gross, smelly, and uninhabitable. But still, $10 beers. $15 beers? Okay, we'll do $15. That's the carryout for March 13th. Speaking of beer, we got a lot of root beer at the self-serve soda machine, but it shares the spigot with fruit punch, so it's more like a root punch. You'll like it. All right, coming up, Heritage Bicycles. Michael Salvatore will be here, my guest on the Download on Chicago Business. And then Al Genie's going to join us, as he does once a month. Let's talk about the big issues tonight. Aging, the act of aging. It's Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Eric Rung, how are you, bud?
Doing well. Enjoying the show so far.
Yeah, good to have you aboard.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so did you, I mean, this is good. Do you like, doing the news? Are you a guy that...
I tell you what. This is the only thing I've ever wanted to do in my entire life, ever since I was a little kid. I wanted to report the news. I'm not joking. That's the God honest truth
that's
right
passion.
There.
That's passion. All right. All right. I like
you
that.
Weren't ready for that, were you?
I was not. I was thinking to be like, yeah, it's okay. I'd rather be home. But hey, that's good. All right. We'll take that passion.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh, it's business.
Yes, it's time for the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment where we talk with local business owners and entrepreneurs, hear their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, we focus on a Chicago business that's part bike shop, part coffee shop, and general store. Heritage Bicycles General Store has a couple outposts on the north side of Chicago in both Lakeview and Uptown. The idea is to provide the community a one-stop shop for all your bike needs, whether that be buying a new custom Heritage bicycle or fixing a flat tire or maybe just needing a good cup of coffee. The idea comes from owner Michael Salvatore at Heritage Bikes. They offer up the first locally manufactured bike since Schwinn left town back in the 70s. A discussion tonight about cycling, community, and coffee with Michael Salvatore. Michael, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So where's this idea come from? Because there are bike shops all over Chicago, and many of them we know very well. Why get into this business, and why offer things other than bikes?
There are great bike shops all over Chicago. And, you know, I actually kind of fell into it. I was out in New York, and in New York, obviously, rent's a little higher than Chicago. So as I was with my first company, manufacturing bicycles in New York, we couldn't afford retail space. So what we did for over 3 to 5 years, we actually went to street fairs and festivals and kind of did this whole thing where we were out there slinging bikes and just trying to get our name out there. But as time went on, I kept noticing how people were much more approachable, much more accessible, easy to talk to when they had like coffee, food in their hand. Mm. And when it came time for me to come back home to Chicago, you know, we had our first kid in New York and we wanted to get back closer to family. I took all those kind of ideas and decided to build a space that incorporated both bikes and coffee.
Well, there's no more intimidating place than a bike shop for someone who's not into bikes. Like for me, I'll go into whenever I go to any of the great places in Chicago and I walk by, the last thing I want to do is go in because I'm like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I feel like, you know, I'm gonna say the wrong part in the wrong place. I mean, for you, is this part of rectifying it by making it more of an open space, a general store, as opposed to just a bike shop?
I'd say I want to make it more approachable. So the idea, you know, people come in, and especially in Chicago where we have like 3 months of summer, maybe. How do you generate income those, you know, the rest of the year?
Yeah, right.
And how do you make sure people keep coming in and consider you as a honest place of business? So we have regulars now coming through the door, but it's not necessarily a response to other bike shops, but bike shops are really passionate about what they do. So if you walk in there as, you know, a commoner off the street and you want to talk bikes, you know, these guys will run circles around you because that is their life. And
yeah,
it's awesome.
Of course, yeah.
You know, with anybody in that industry or any industry that they are passionate about, it's very intimidating to talk to.
You know, I always think about it too because it is a very niche industry, mm-hmm. meaning that you'll have a lot of bike shops, like you said, they pop up and are able to survive and do things for 3 months out of the year in this town.
Yeah.
You know, for you to get into this business and to not only be a bike shop that's going to have services for flat tires or for apparel or for bike parts, but to get into the world of custom manufacturing, that's different than a bike shop. That's different than bring the bike in and I'll fix this tire. Well, talk about that because that now you're going up against, like I mentioned earlier, Schwinn, other big major companies.
That's the fun part, right? I mean, let's get creative with it. If we're going to do it, we might as well do it. For me, it's really fun to kind of bring the ideas to life, and manufacturing is one of those processes where I have an idea, I want to do it, I want to make it a reality, and we talk with our engineer and our, you know, bike guys and our fabricator, and we just make it happen. And you know, year to year, it's an improvement on the year before because of the things we learned. So being local not only provides us access to some great talent, but also makes us nimble.
Do you become a bike historian? I mean, on your website, I was reading all about the about us, and you mentioned the thing about, you know, you're now the only or the first ever local manufacturer since Schwinn left.
No, so
do you start paying attention to who was here and at different times?
I mean, listen, you pay homage to that. That's part of the heritage of it all. Not only is it, you know, fifth generation Chicago for me, but it's also all the history of bicycling in Chicago. There's so much here, starting at the turn of the century. It's impossible not to. To go back to that and reference that in everything you do. Because if you look at bikes that are lasting for the longest time, it's Schwinn's. Mm-hmm. You'll see Schwinn's out there from 40s, 50s, 60s that haven't been tuned up since then, and they're still riding because they're made so well. So in order for us to do something like that, we want to do it right, and we want to do it in that same shadow.
There's a lot that goes into this, and we'll talk about the business challenges coming up here. But when you just talk about style and trends, bikes seem to fall into that category as well. If you think about 10, 15 years ago, all the rage was the mountain bike. This idea that, you know, you can go to the bike shop and get yourself a $1,000, you know,
yeah,
a bike that makes it seem like you're off-roading, but you're going down Ashland,
going up
right?
curves.
Yeah, right, right. But I mean, and in recent time, you've seen a more, I don't know what the right word would be, a more antique style or hipster style bike. Well, a lot of the kind of stuff that you're...
It's a city bike.
Yeah, it's a city bike. So talk about, I mean, are you a slave to the styles and trends of what's being what customers want when it comes to bicycles?
You know, for me, that's just a response to what I like. And as we evolved, we have more integration into like the more performance stuff. So we'll eventually, this year, we're coming out with a more performance line, a cross bike that we're going to release this year with our team and then put in production hopefully end of the year before cross season starts. So, you know, doing stuff that you want to do is important. I grew up in Rogers Park. I took the lakefront. I rode the bike a lot, and it was always just like city bike Schwinn. So that's what I know. You know, that's what I want to do. So is it a trend? Probably, yeah. But it's not like it's like I went somewhere looking for this trend. It's kind of just something that I knew and that I wanted to do.
Right.
So it's hard to like say that we're following this trend. It's just it's what I know. It's what we do.
Can Heritage be a coffee shop and bike repair store without the manufacturing part? I mean, or do you need both to survive as a small business in Chicago?
No, it might be easier. You know, it's like we're paying, you know, wages, and we're paying for the talent in Chicago. I mean, we can easily buy some bikes in Taiwan. It looks like the same exact bike and bring them over for, you know, $30 a pop.
Right.
And that's an easier solution to that. But for what we want to do, it's the challenge is the fun part. It's easy to say, okay, we're going to, you know, buy some bikes and put them on the floor and sell them. It's actually not that easy, but I say that. But, you know, I think it's part of the brand, part of who we are, part of who we want to be. And making things locally is important, especially when we started back in New York, specifically in 2007, 2008, when the economy was going to crap. And we wanted to really make a difference and make sure that jobs were here and we were doing something against the grain. So that was kind of instilled on me right from then there.
Well, let's talk about the business challenges. Michael Salvatore is my guest. He's the owner of Heritage Bicycles. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation here on the Download on Chicago Business. So stay with us.
It's business time.
It's a Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. Michael Salvatore is in studio. He's with Heritage Bikes. We were talking about the bicycle shop business. And I love it because you've diversified in the way that you have a store and a community center that is not just about bikes. You get coffee. You can. A lot of people meet there. It really is a center of a community.
Yeah.
Then the manufacturing on the side. What are the biggest challenges for you as an entrepreneur, as an owner of a shop like this? Is it just cost going out? And is it just a numbers game? What are the challenges?
The challenge, because we grow and we've probably opened up a shop a year, including my wife's studio and our bar. It is cash flow issues. You know, it's just like, we are putting our money back into this, and it becomes, you know, crunch time, especially in the wintertime when everyone is slow.
Right.
So it's a matter of surviving the winter and then putting more money back into the business.
Does it start now? Does March be the month that people start thinking
weekends.
About? But is that what it is?
Yeah, so we had some great weekends the past 2 weeks, especially because you saw 45, 50 degrees.
Right.
You know, lines out the door on the weekend. People bringing their bikes. They're getting ready. If you haven't brought on your bike, you should bring your bike this week. But it starts, people start talking about it. April comes around, all of a sudden June and July, and people are like, oh, I should be on a bike, and then they start really piling in. And you know, our process is 2 to 6 weeks, depending on what you want for a bike.
Do you, as a businessman, when you're working in a seasonal business, do you have to think ahead when you're in July, August? You got to start thinking about what's going to be the cash flow situation in December, January?
I mean, you're always thinking about it. I never plan for it, but you always think about it. I mean, you go to bed sleeping and thinking about it. So we're not that big to kind of perform that
way. What
can
you do? What can you do when
you gotta be lean? You gotta be lean. You gotta, like, you know, be able to know what you're getting into and be lean and make sure you have diversification in your businesses so that when, you know, it's slow in wintertime now we open Larry's up in Uptown, which is our cocktail bar, that provides some stability for the cash flow.
You know, you mentioned that, the cocktail bar. You've got a couple of stores. You've got the manufacturing area. I mean, you really are putting a lot into diversifying your brand, your business. What are the challenges with doing that? I mean, is it risky in the sense that are you the kind of entrepreneur that says, you know what, Larry's ain't working, I got to get rid of it?
No, I mean, yes, you have to assume that, right? I was once a day trader, in and out of positions. I understand that philosophy. At the same time, we're lucky enough to put enough care into it that I think people recognize what we're trying to do and appreciate what we're doing and come out and support it. But, you know, again, it's just a matter of making sure that your processes are in place and that you are hedging your bets against, you know, everything else going on. So we try to set ourselves up in a position where it's a no fail. Usually some of the new businesses or retail stores we go into tend to be really easy for us to get into because of our brand name. So people, developers want us there, which is great. It's a great way to grow the business. We have, you know, I say 3.5 stores opening in the next 18 months.
Really?
Yeah. Heritage Bikes and Coffee.
And I mean, that's amazing to think about, and congratulations on your success. And I think about, I mean, just getting ready for this segment and looking at all the press and the marketing that you've been able to accumulate over the years for Heritage. I mean, whether it be national people who come in and they want to, we're in Chicago, so we got to check out Heritage. Beyonce bought this bike, you know, that kind of stuff. Does that translate to business success? I mean, this idea of building a national brand?
So does it translate to dollars? I mean, I'm assuming so in some way. The brand recognition? Absolutely. You know, we didn't plan on getting the recognition we've gotten. I assume that, you know, maybe in 3 years I'd be able to make $1. And we got, you know, off the ground running pretty quickly. The national stuff is, the local stuff's unbelievable. I can't believe the national stuff. And we don't have PR. We don't have any of this stuff. We just posts, you know, on Instagram and Facebook, and we do our thing because we like what we're doing.
No, I mean, I reached out to you. I mean, I know, because it's an interesting business model and the concept of a community run bike shop. I mean, because bike shops are always a part of a community. I think about where I grew up in the town. There was a bike shop. There's also an auto mechanic. There was also a True Value. But the point being that it was part of, and you don't see it necessarily neighborhood by neighborhood anymore. Right. So there is something in our DNA that accepts the idea of the bike shop being at the center of our community.
Well, you think about it too. It's a multicultural thing. You go anywhere in the world, bikes and coffee are both accessible. I mean, anywhere you go, and it spans economics, and it spans generations, and it's something that's always available. So you know about it growing up, both those things. So you put yourself in front of these situations where you catch an audience that wide, hopefully someone pays attention.
It's now been over a decade that you've been working with Heritage. You know, go back to the first couple years of doing this. What have you learned? Or maybe the question is, what would you change from some of the things you did early in your entrepreneurial career?
Well, let me correct you. It's been 6 years.
6 years.
Okay. And, you know, some of the early things is business-wise. I mean, your head's in the cloud thinking about big picture and brand. I think early on, if I were to set myself up, I would have someone pay attention a little bit more to the numbers and have someone there telling me, you know, this is the way you grow, or this is what you pay, and this is what you should be paying. You know, right now we're lucky enough where we're in a position where we can do all these things, but a lot of people wouldn't have survived if we didn't get lucky and get all the press and set ourselves up for people coming in, which our neighborhood supports us. You know, I think that would be a different story right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a business owner, you have to think about the other side. It's not sexy. It's the numbers. It's you know, making sure that you're okay to grow. I also often say that entrepreneurs are probably the stupidest people ever, because we don't. There's no consequences. Like, you don't think about consequences, because if you did, you wouldn't do it. You know, you wouldn't do anything. So you talk yourself out of it. And I think I know from experience that I'm really dumb and I just keep doing these things and keep going to business with no cash flow. So, you know, I guess
it's kind of refreshing. I can't tell you how many times there are entrepreneurs in here who essentially say, I'm pretty smart. I'm a genius. So it's good to hear.
No, come on. Think about it. I mean, think about all the risk you're putting at it. It's just insane. It's not for the faint of heart, for sure.
What's it mean for you? I mean, this segment's called The Download on Chicago Business, and you spent part of your life in New York, but you grew up here. What's it mean? Why do you stay? Why does Heritage have to be a Chicago company?
It's me, man. This is my DNA. I mean, fifth generation. I live in the same apartment building that my great-grandfather built in 1902. You know, in generations before that, they were here. It's something about the city that I just can't get rid of. We can go anywhere, but we'd always come back to Chicago, and it's the people here, the city, the put your head down and work. You know, don't think about the stars and the moon and get your head up there. You know, you just do what you do every day and go to work. And I think that says something about our brand, the people that work for me and with me, and why we're successful, because we don't care about the other stuff. It's fluff.
So this is the week that you got to come service your bike.
This is the week. Come in here, guys. You know, summer's right around the corner. Don't wait up for that queue to, you know, service your bike.
Michael Salvatore is the owner of Heritage Bicycles. Also, what's it? Heritage Bicycles General Store? Is that the other? You can, they're in Uptown, Lakeview, the manufacturing, the great website, everything in between. Michael, thanks so much for being my guest on the Download of Chicago.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Eric. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Jerry Brennan from Tortoise Books will be with us to talk about the art of independent publishing. So many writers who may be listening or in studio with me right now are familiar with the process of what it takes to be published and how head-scratching and sometimes hair-pulling the process can be. Jerry went through it, and when he was done, he set up a Kickstarter and determined that he was going to start his own publishing company, not only for his work, but for other writers who have gone through the same thing. So Jerry will talk with us coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now in the 8 o'clock hour, growing old. Who needs it? When I talk about my age, I always tell friends that it's your 40s. They're interesting because that's the age when you start to realize that pain that you have, that little pain on the side, maybe in your back. It's going to be the thing that probably kills you. That's what the 40s. That's the 40s. Tonight we talk about aging, really about the concept and how it's been interpreted throughout human history. What do the greatest thinkers of our time say about growing old? And how can we grow older without being old? The act of aging, that's the conversation this month with our resident philosopher, Al Genie. Al is a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. Go Ramblers. And he's the author of several books, including his latest, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. 312-981-7200 if you got something to say about getting old. Al Genie, good to see you.
Good to see you, and I've got my Rambler colors on and ready to go. Let me just make one plug for student athletes. I've got half the team in class.
Yeah?
They are great students.
I didn't know you taught basket weaving.
Yes. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. He's working the room all week. Mr. Custer, the point guard, got it, honest to God, A, the old-fashioned way. He wrote great papers. And Nick DeGardi is in class. They are just wonderful guys. They actually show up for class. They actually do the business.
Right.
It's a nice, nice
That's good to know.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if that's going to help against Miami on Thursday, but it's good to know.
Good to know.
So, anyway,
listen,
so,
you asked for great thinkers.
Yes.
And let me start off with a great, great thinker from the 1930s. Betty Davis said, old age ain't for sissies, honey. It just ain't for sissy. It is a tough thing. And people look at it as a curse, as a penalty, as something that we simply have to endure before we die, rather than any other thing on it. But, you know, the great philosophers had other thoughts. Going back to all the way to Plato. Again, we were only casual friends. I didn't know him that well at the time. Says he talked about old age in some sense, in a very real sense. He talked about old age as an opportunity to put aside the passions and indiscretions of youth, rather than be horrified by old age. And by the way, Socrates was about 70 when he took the hemlock cup and committed suicide. Now, 70 in Greece at the time was not like an ancient age, because it was perfect climate, perfect food, so on and so forth. And then, you know, ages declined in the Middle Ages, so on and so forth. But he was a man in full still at that time. And he didn't look at age as this horrible deprivation of the body because he had been a stonecutter, he had been a hoplite, he had been a real person, he was a philosopher. But he said, the best thing is we can put things away. We can learn the lessons of life and walk away from the pain, he said. We can look beyond the unimportant and parochial particulars of life. We can let go of some of our self-serving egoism. We can transcend pointless power struggles and pointless issues. We no longer feel a failure because we've survived. Mm. We've made it to a certain age. I mean, there is something. You want to read a good day, my grandfather said to me. He would get up in the morning. I swear, he lived with me until he was 94. And then he went off someplace and he died on me. And he'd get up in the morning and go, surprise. I swear. I was just ordered.
Well, I mean, there's so much to talk about when it comes to aging. But, you know, there's that old thought of aging being something that is done with, you know, that's
malice and forethought,
but then there's also reflection and wisdom, and then there's a third that's this calm.
We gotta have a lot of disclaimers here. I'm too much of a realist. Age doesn't necessarily result in wisdom or insight. God, I wish that were the case. I think real wisdom, as Abraham Maslow said, is knowledge, experience, and living long enough to make sense of it, okay? And I think we don't really believe in the Dookie Housers of the world. You really don't want a 14-year-old child genius taking out your appendix. You want the guy who's done it 500 times before you do it. But I do think that real wisdom needs aging, and you need a certain age, you need some life experience. But I don't think just because you get old, in fact, one of the real conundrums of being a salty senior citizen, long past my Social Security required due date, is that I bump into friends from high school. Some are still alive. We fought in the Union Army together. and they are as childish as when I knew them 55 years ago. And I family members who have not changed a twit. They are not adorable senior citizens. They're the pain in the butt parochial teenagers yet. So I don't think just because wisdom there is insight. And age is not necessarily, I have to recognize, not necessarily a physical and psychological problem. It is true that at the age of 85, about 72% of us have some disability, and 55% have more.
But it
isn't because you're 65 and you fall apart. In fact, although I'm very careful in saying this, you know, today's 70 is my father's 50. But you're still 70. But the reality is you don't look that way. My grandfather, he did die at 94. And just to have a picture of him, he looked like Pope John the 23rd. Really, it was a double going for John the 23rd. But he looked that way when he was 32.
Well, yeah. And what I want to do in this hour is talk about what you think needs to go into perspective when you talk about aging. What do we have to put? And also, what is the key to a successful, graceful aging process?
And preparing for this presentation, I read the new bestseller right now, John Leland's Happiness is a Choice That We Make. And he's not talking about, we've talked about happiness before, not talking about happiness in old age. And first of all, he argues it's an artifact. Happiness in old age is not a given. First of all, the reality is, in talking about this, I want to be very careful. We're talking about kind of and even Leland is talking about a kind of a cut of people that are very, very lucky. They have some money, they've lived long enough. But also, given that, so you have to have some health.
Right, right.
In fact, without health.
Health. Right. Yeah, it's a big part of it.
The reality is, but that you have to prepare for this. You just can't let it happen to you. Although it is the case that old age is a language we can't learn until we get there.
What I love, though, Al, and I'm sorry to cut you off, that's a great way to put it, is it's something you have to prepare for. And we're told constantly that you have to prepare for it monetarily. You have to prepare for it with your health. But perspective and preparing for what you're going to need as you grow older is as important. And not just the material things, but your perspective, how you perceive happiness.
How you perceive happiness, right. And there, he gives a wonderful little line in the book that really catches the whole thing. It's a wonderful metaphor. He says, you know, you could be old and you could be angry that you're old and you're infirm, so on and so forth. And you could be taken to the museum and you could be angry about the fact that your caretaker had to bring you there and you're confined to a wheelchair and there's all these old people around because it's Tuesday and it's a free day. Or you could sit there and think and look up and say, oh, look, a Matisse. So he's saying that happiness is not what we thought happiness was in youth, when you had this unlimited amount of energy that you thought you could expand. Happiness is right this moment. Happiness is what makes you happy now. Happiness means, I just had a wonderful, together, I met, I re-met a woman who was part of my life as a teenager. It was one of my best friends' moms, and she's 93 years old. And I go over to her house. She says, "Hi, honey, want a drink?" And it's 10:30 in the morning, and I said, "Little Ernie says, not for me necessarily."
Not for me.
And you know, we had that drink, and that, and then when I left, she had a little nap, and she, I got a call back. I had a lovely day. Thank you for coming over. That moment. And so what Leland is talking about is, how do we find those moments? How do we find those things we need to be happy in the moment? But we have to plan for it. And the real thesis of the book, and the thesis I'm embracing personally, this is not just a radio show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not just working the room all week. Is ready, a quote from David Bowie, believe it or not, whose music I could not stand or tolerate. Aging is an extraordinary process whereby we get a chance to become the persons we always should have been.
And that's a great place to make our first break tonight. Al Genie, a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, our resident philosopher here on The Download, joins us once a month. We're talking about aging, getting older. 312-981-7200. If you have thoughts on this topic, share them. It's The Download. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here with Professor Al Genie, our resident philosopher in The Download, joins us once a month. Talk about the big, big ticket items. Tonight we're talking aging, which, of course, I mean, the tagline has been all day. I did a promo and it kind of grabbed a lot of people's attention, growing older without being old. I mean, that's really, as we think about what you can do to prepare yourself for the inevitability that we all go through. It's not just something that rich people go through, poor people go through, different, everybody ages.
Right.
And so you got to be prepared. So
right.
Let's talk about preparation.
I do have to be prepared. But I want to come back and correct you, because I'm only going to give you a C-plus in the promo. You do grow older. You can't avoid growing old, but you can avoid staying flexible in your mind. That's
that just
really
doesn't,
the issue.
But that doesn't roll off the tongue.
Well,
I got to do these promos
tongue,
in 15
but
seconds.
The point is, you could be infirmed in a wheelchair and still be very, very alive. I mean, when you think about it, there's a TV show about scientists, you know, PhDs. I love it. The Big Bang Theory, so on and so forth. And Hawking comes on there, and he's 76 years old, and he's still in that chair doing mathematics.
Right.
I mean, that's what.
Well, the concept in my mind is this: we all have to go through it.
Right.
So, how do we prepare to age gracefully, but to be prepared for a positive life?
Right. First
to
of all,
embrace
have to,
it.
Let's put money aside right now. The reality is that the Harvard Medical Research people have put together is you've got to have some basic physiological things taken care of. First of all, not smoking or quitting smoking. I mean, I only miss smoking when I'm breathing, but it's the worst thing in the world you could possibly do to yourself, and the long term damage, both to by the way, brain capacity. We're finding out not just lung capacity, but brain capacity. Positive mental attitude, that is, by all through your life, not looking for always cures, but looking for coping devices. We've talked about my book, The Importance of Being Funny. Humor, to me, is my coping device. It isn't a cure, and it can't be always the crutch by which you overcome. You know, the Holocaust. Well, let me tell you a joke. No, but you have to develop coping mechanisms. And I think people have to be, you know, there's a concept in business right now that's been, the concept is around forever and ever, and it's Plato and Socrates, the unexamined life, emotional intelligence.
Right.
Not only knowing what you are, but knowing how other people's
coping mechanisms. I mean, because some would say you don't talk about it being a positive coping mechanism, because some would say smoking is a coping mechanism,
right?
So there are the idea of developing positive coping mechanisms.
Right.
And I guess that falls into disposition.
I think you have to choose
that. Do you see that people who, when we talk about age, that people might come with a more negative disposition or having a
because you're resentful.
Time aging?
Your body's not as fluid, and the competencies aren't there. You don't think as fast, and that's just a fact, Jack. You sit there and remember, you can remember what you had for lunch 38 years ago, but you can't remember if you ate lunch today. These physiological things change and really do happen, but you can prepare for these things, and I think you prepare for these things by the James Lang theory. That is, you have to act yourself into feeling. You have to do something. You're feeling bad, take a walk. You're not liking this, go to a movie. My wife and I, really important, we watch a lot of films at night. But for me, unless I go to a theater, it isn't the same experience. I need, because you're A, watching a great film, seen in a much bigger projector and film, but you're out. And that includes a drink, and you talk, and you see. So I think that one of the things that happens to people, you have to be engaged. You have to be in something in life. That's why the statistic of people who have dogs live longer. Ask Barbara Streisand. Apparently, she wants to live forever. She's, by the way, she's cloning herself next week. But nevertheless, I think the engagement, it goes on some physical things. Not total abstentions from alcohol, thank God, but absence of alcohol abuse. Because it has a long-term effect, like smoking, and because I've lived long enough to see people really who've deteriorated very quickly from alcohol. Drink, and then say, oh, they're fine, and then boom. You know, then the liver, then
the,
whatever.
The mix of aging and alcoholism
is
not
very
good.
Dangerous. Then you don't have to abstain from that because otherwise they wouldn't be here tonight. But that's a joke right there. healthy weight, believe it or not. You know, we're not talking about being an Adonis, but healthy weight. And a solid marriage, except there's a little caveat here. They say that men live longer though are married. It's true. Ironically, women live longer without the man. But I think it's the couple front. I think it's companionship and it's doing things for each other.
Are we, I mean, because you see this more and more studies that come out as, you know, the idea of marriage or just relationships and just companionship shift in 2018. Yeah. Will studies come out in the next couple of years to say, oh, you know what? This person never got married and they're happy and they lived the longest life of anyone. They're 140. You know, like you get to a certain point where the traditions and the institutions.
You know, coffee is good for you this month. Next month the institution comes out, coffee's bad for you. Next month tea is good for you. Know, all that kind of stuff. I hope I'm here in 28 years to answer that question exactly. then we could really have a show in aging. That would be a miracle. But I think the reality is there's been a lot of longitudinal studies on this that enforced solitude is simply not good for you. Remember, solitude can be broken by picking up a book and engaging in the characters in a book. We need human contact.
So if you're listening to this right now and you're aging and you're in the, I don't know, say the twilight of your life, maybe in your 70s, 80s, and you are in a situation where you're by yourself, that's not what we're talking. We're not talking about you being by yourself as a recipe for not being able to be happy when you're old. Because you can find different ways to engage with books, with theater, with acting,
And the point
movies,
that you need stimuli. And one of the things is you need, what they're talking about, we have to learn something. Every book tells you about you got to learn something. That is, we're talking about languages in your old age, math, learning chess. I'm going to pick up chess again. I haven't played chess since I was a kid.
This is a big part. We can do an hour on this.
Absolutely. You need these kind of things. Yeah. You need these kind of things. Exercise and physical activity. Absolutely. You know, by the way, sex is exercise. I'm serious right now. And we're not talking about being, you know, I'm Arnold. Hello, I pick up weights all day long. No. But there are appropriate ranges of exercise that are really necessary. Muscle development, so on and so forth, adds to kind of kinetic performance and feeling better about oneself. And then, again, the education, being engaged in life. The danger is getting up in the morning, having that cup of coffee and staring at that television or staring at that wall, so on and so forth, that you need some involvement in life. Because I think there's that old American, indigenous American story about the grandfather is going to die. Says, this is a good day to die. But and the little son, the grandson comes up, says, but grandfather, if you die, what will I do tomorrow? And he says, a question I didn't ponder. Perhaps I should live yet another day.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I think we need these kinds of things, but that's a component. But I think the reality is, we need to work at it. It is an artifact. We need to overcome the dread of it. We need to overcome our apathy. We need to overcome, and we think we have to develop another attitude towards it. And I think we have to give up myths. First of all, being 65 is no longer old. In fact, the new old is 85 plus. And we're going right now from about 4 million people 85 plus. We're going to go to 22 million 85 plus in a very short time. So we're skewing the demographics. Not only are we living longer, there are more of us in age groups. So my generation, I'm a senior baby boomer, okay? I'm actually a victory baby, born in 44. You know, during the war, preparing for, I know exactly where I was.
I read the World Book. I know when the war ended.
That's World War II, just in case you're not sure of that. So this group is coming up, but then we're living longer and longer and longer. And I look at my son and his group of friends, and they're approaching 50. I'm going, they don't look that. Mm-hmm. They don't seem that,
you know.
And we're changing how we're doing that. We have to be. I think.
Well,
we
let's do this.
That.
Let's do this because we'll take a break to get Eric's news, and then we'll come back and talk about the miss. And I believe that a lot of what we're talking about, especially all the things you just mentioned, really had to do with life factors and keeping your health up, and how that at the end of the day is going to help with happiness, which is a huge component to aging in a way that is positive. I want to ask as well, and this is what we'll get to, is that for me, I'm 43 years old, Al.
And you look a lot older.
Thank you. And but for me, I feel like, you know, age becomes almost, you start to get to this point where you start to recognize and you can make choices in your life to say, listen, I am aging. I get it. I'm 43 years old. And you start to go, God, I wish I was younger. Oh, look at these young. I mean, coming up, you know, I'm going to have a kid who's coming up on the show in the 9 o'clock hours, 23 years old. He's making a career out of rap. But point being that, like, you start to go, oh, geez, I'm getting so old. And it almost creeps in at an early age. I mean, because right now we're talking a lot about seniors and people going to be 70, 80, 85 years old. But even for people in their 40s and 50s, age plays a huge role. Aging plays a huge role.
And you know what the demon is? Boredom and apathy. And I think we have to recognize boredom has to be overcome and apathy has to be taken.
All right, we'll talk about it in the second half here. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in the conversation. Professor Al Jeany is my guest. He's with us, the resident philosopher for The Download, with us every month. He is a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation about aging. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here with Professor Al Jeany, our resident philosopher, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. Go Ramblers.
Go Ramblers.
Big NCAA tournament. And we learned early on in this segment, the kids do go to class.
Do come to class. I have a little lecture with them. I used to give them a little lecture all the time. I said, your chances of making it to the NBA and being as good as Michael Jordan are two, slim and none. So if you're here and you're on scholarship, you get education and your books paid for and you'll probably be a big man on campus. Play ball. You get paid to do what you love to do.
Yeah, right.
And they do. They're lovely. They're really nice young men. I had the 85 team in class too. Al Friedrich was in my class. I showed up twice. But the rest of the team actually came to class. They were absolutely excellent, excellent young men. I'm so proud of that tradition there. Really.
All right.
They're good.
Now I feel like we've adequately covered the Loyola Ramblers.
That's
so
right.
Thank you for that.
Into
that. We're talking aging with Professor Al Jeany tonight. 847 says, I just turned 60. I feel like I'm in a good place in my life, even with the responsibilities of my husband's health issues. I think an important part of aging is to keeping busy, having a purpose in life, a reason to get out of bed each morning. You said something earlier, Al, about boredom.
Yeah.
Boredom seems to be the one thing that creeps into life and starts to become a negative aspect to aging. It seems that 847 is talking about the same thing.
And that she's spot on. A 93-year-old told me 4 points to reinforce the caller. Stop complaining. Be thankful because aging is a gift, not a given. I think we have to remember that.
Yeah.
Getting old, it's a new phenomenon. And people didn't get old. At the turn of the century, the average age, I mean 1900, not 2000, and it was 47. In 2000, it was 74.
Wow.
So we've changed everything. Secondly, you can't go back. Let bygones be, let go of it. Just let go of it. In fact, there's a phrase I want to sneak in there. The tyranny of the still. I still can do this. I can still. No, you can't. I still play handball. Not anywhere. It's not even a close facsimile to what I did 40 years ago. But I still play. Okay. And finally, she said, "Okay, learn something." That's actually five things. Don't always stay home. And be grateful. In fact, all the geriatrics studies have said people who are really happy in their old age are grateful for the fact they're still alive and still enjoying it. Again, my grandfather getting up going, surprise, and then he made coffee.
Yeah.
And it was just absolutely wonderful.
Well, okay, so let me ask about, right before the break, we talked about, like in my situation, I'm a 43-year-old man. And I get to a certain point where my age bracket won't be necessarily seniors. It won't be the 65 and up, but the age starts to play a role. You get midlife crisis. You start to find ways that boredom creeps in and you want to be 25. I mean, maybe a 65 wants to be 45, but 45 wants to be 25.
Everybody wants somebody else. And the reality is, we're caught in the age that we are. I mean, this is our real universe. And we forget that every age has its challenge. So 13 to 30 is supposed to be such a great thing. Well, it's not. Think about it. Think about 13 to 30. It's the end of childhood. It's puberty. It's school. It's the pursuit of identity. It's discovering sex, the good and the bad parts. It's adult status. It's marriage, kids of your own, mortgages, job scares. What's so awful? I mean, I look back at that now. If you say, would I want to go back to? No. Do I want to take care of two kids simultaneously? No. Do I love them? Yes. Did I survive it? Thank God. Hallelujah. And was it a worthwhile experience? Yes. But would I do it again? No.
I wonder, at 43, you know, because you think about the word boredom, and there's so much in there that you can unpack. But obviously, when boredom is, it robs people of the purpose of life, or boredom robs people of getting up in the morning, like 847 was talking about. And it just feels like, at 43, boredom is a recipe for midlife crisis, where you essentially go, I'm still close to being 20.
Right.
I'm closer than I was if I'm 65, I'll just act like I'm 20.
I think it's regret, anxiety, and not being objective. And I think boredom means you're not being stimulated enough, but you're also not involved in what you're doing. I think the major problem of boredom is you're not engaged. It happens to me, you know, Camus talks about the anxiety of a Sunday, sitting on the balcony, and the heat coming down. I'm not sure what I should do. I have no obligations. People are walking around. This entropy that's entered this person. Again, the James Lang theory. You have to act yourself into feeling. You can't feel yourself into you have to act. You have to get up. Boredom can only be erased by stimuli, and that is you have to self-stimulation. You could take that any way you want to right now, but self-stimulation in order to be. You have to get up and do something. Boredom is a killer because you just sit there. And and by the way, it's like fear. Fear in the wildlife, it's just kind of amazing. I've seen animals being taken down by a predator because they freeze. And their fear is so great that they freeze. And the predator, who otherwise couldn't get them, then has a chance to make that move, okay? And so I think that the same thing with boredom. You can't freeze. If you are bored, you have to get out of it. There is no psychological remedy for it. It has to be physical first and psychological second.
Yeah. Al Genie, my guest, and I were talking about aging. 312-981-7200. 779 says, age is just a number, but getting old sucks.
Yeah.
That's a better promo.
That's absolutely true. I think age is just not just a number. It is, in point of fact, this nomenclature, do we talk about it, you know, that way? And I remember my mother, we decide what's old. My mother telling me I'm the oldest, crabbiest man she ever met. And I was 8 years old at the time. At my 8-year-old birthday party, think Fraser, because I was complaining about the decorations and the cake and the gifts. But she always thought being the oldest man she ever met because, well, partly because I read books and I was asking her questions. Said, you should be worried about that now. But I was worried about that at the time.
You have plenty of time when you're over 65.
Right. 65. Right. But again, this is engagement. And I think, again, all the studies are showing that the people who are happiest in old age are, first of all, grateful. They say, I swear to gosh, God, I am so thankful for my wife and my life. I say it out loud all the time. I say it to her.
Have you been a grateful person your entire life?
No, I took it for granted. I always thought I worked hard. You know, I'm not an exceptional human being. I worked hard. I've had a good life. I've had a great life. But now I realize I've had a great life. I mean, I've had a wonderful life. No one killed me. No one pursued me. I didn't lose a home. I didn't lose a limb. I didn't lose, you know, I've had an extraordinarily lucky life.
And all of the things we've been talking about, when we talk about happiness, and happiness is the key to aging, and what gets in the way of happiness, health issues has been a big part of course. This conversation and other. But for you personally, when I think of you, and you've been on this program a number of times, I know a lot about your life just from, you know, whether it be something with your back or possibly, you know, like the jokes you make about getting older, or even the humor that surrounds being a part of the Union Army or knowing Plato. When you talk about the things that you told us to do, like for instance, disposition.
Yeah.
This concept of, hey, you gotta have a nice outlook. You have to be nicer. Is it hard? I mean, for you at your age right now to make a change, to say, you know what, Al's right, I'm right, I need to flip a switch and change the way I am.
No, you can't flip. It doesn't. It's easy for me now, but I've been doing it for 15 years. When I turned 60, I said, this is a game changer. I'm still, I think, vibrant and vital, and I'm playing ball, and we go dancing. But this is a game changer. And this is now the last segment of my life. How do I deal with this? And I've been I am not, believe it or not, I am shy. I'm a shy person. I'm a quiet person, but I'm also a public performer. I'm more in my head than most people, and I need to get out. I need to say thank you. I need to humor.
You figured out a way to remind yourself.
And humor again. Humor is this way that allows me to share joy. It's a little concocted. You have to be careful because then you become the buffoon. Right. You walk into a room and you tell people six jokes. They're going, one would have been fine, and two was too many. Right. But I think this is, again, a choice. You have to let go. You have to make this choice. You have to admit every age has its benefits and drawbacks. You have to make a choice about what I'm going to do about this. At the same time, you have to give up this myth of control that you can control it. But you have to be grateful for it.
Yeah, and keep coming back to that. And grateful. Right,
because you're not entitled to this.
Yeah.
You're simply not
entitled. I love it. So, I mean, just taking away from the two things that you have to avoid boredom.
Yeah.
And you have to be grateful.
Yeah. And everything, you know, I knew you before you had a child. I knew you when you had hair. I knew you ages and ages ago, right? But think how lucky your life is.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
No, I'm Justin, trust me. I'm very grateful. You know, but
these are really things that we need to reflect on.
I always think about it because with my 10-year-old son, I'm in the practice of using some philosophy on him that I learned from comedy and from improv that I try to teach him. I say this more often than not whenever he says no to something.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, you should try this pizza. No.
No.
And I say, you should adopt a yes and lifestyle. You need to, yes and. That's improv. That's why improv works.
Right,
if you follow that formula, yes and, on stage. If someone says they're in a coffee shop, yes
and. The coffee was great. And the coffee was great.
And, right. And to me, I always bring it back to disposition, this idea that there's so much more to life and ways to celebrate and celebrate your curiosity with yes and. There's so many things that's going to make you a better human being than shutting the
door. And you're catching exactly what we're talking about in aging right now. And I think that here's the clicker. If you don't try to make yourself happy, you get older. You get more entrenched. The longer you're without stimuli, the more difficult it is. I remember going to see an old philosopher friend of mine who was into logic, who was really a genius at logic. His name was Emanuel Bohinsky. And he always thought that you cannot answer a question in class because you people are so stupid you couldn't even formulate a good one. He was this brilliant man. He was dying, but I really loved him in a way. And I said, Professor Bohinsky, you're sitting in bed and there are no books around. You're not doing, because he was always doing mathematical formulas and logical formulas. He says, without an audience, why bother?
Mm.
He needed to perform.
Right.
And I think that the danger of old age is we feel that we can't perform. We feel that we're not important. And we have to recognize that we may not, you know, for a lot of people, it's hard to say, I am the former dean. I am the former president.
Right, right.
I am the former whatever. But I think you have to remember, you know, I was lucky enough to have been a former.
All right, let's take a couple of calls before we wrap up.
Oh,
here.
Wow.
Elizabeth, what do you want to say on aging?
Hey, I love this guy.
I'm available on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Hey, what do you know? I'm in recovery for 31 years now.
Congratulations.
And this is something I had to learn early on. You got to be grateful. You got to be That's grateful. Right. You got to live in the moment. And if you're bored, it's your own damn fault, sorry, because there's nothing boring about being alive.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Boy, you hit it right on the head. The whole thing of recovery,
Elizabeth,
is every day is an adventure. You know, one day at a time. Every day is an adventure. One drink is too many. One drink is not enough. Two is too many. And I have to decide that I'm going to be sober.
Yeah.
I think you have to decide that you're going to try to be happy.
Let's go to Vince. Vince, what do you want to say on the topic of aging tonight?
A couple things. I'm 80, very active. My girlfriend 4 years ago was 42-year-old girl from Paris. Okay, I'm out all the time, but I do see a difference now in the last 4 or 5 years that respect. There's a new term we're using, elderphobic, that we're not treated the same way. Yeah. When you walk into a bank or you look at this or you walk, so forth, so on, and then people say to me, oh, I'm surprised the knowledge, and this is what's, you no longer have the village elder in a neighbor, which is contributing to the crime.
Yeah. I think there's a difference. Let me spin on one point. I was recently in Italy, and I one of my other back issues, and I was on a cane, and every time I walked into a place, or we got in the Vapero in Venice, people got up, you know, si accomodi, posso fare una cosa per lei, and I think that gentilite is bred into that society, and it's not ours, and with the younger population, it's changed that. I think we're losing the notion of neighborhood and the respect of gray hair. In history, gray hair meant you were a man of respect.
All right, now I have three takeaways from this segment. One, be grateful. Two, watch out for boredom. And three, get up.
Get up. Absolutely. Get up. You don't get up in the morning. You know.
I mean, get up when Al Genie comes walking in with a cane.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
I thought you meant get up in the morning. You know why? I get up every morning at 5 o'clock. You know why?
Why?
Because statistics suggest that old people die in bed. So if you're up, you got the day.
Al Genie is a professor of business ethics at Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. And he's our resident philosopher, joins us once a month here on The Download. We'll see you in April.
One hopes. But I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Jerry Brennan from Tortoise Books. And then Johnny Jones, Chicago hip-hop artist, young man who has just signed with Closed Sessions. Big piece on him in The Reader last week. Great to have him in studio tonight. Talk about his young career in music. 10 o'clock tonight, Chris Churchill and Amy Sumpter are going to play the worst things in society. If you got one, you could win a pizza. I wanted to ask, I didn't get to the aging, but I wanted to get to this concept that we all have of when you're 38 and you're like, well, I'm almost 40. Or you're 46 and you're like, I'm almost 50. It's almost like you want to get there. Or in some strange way, it's some marker for you. And that's the moment where it's all over. And why we do that as human, it's so interesting to me. Because if you got rid of that, who cares how old you are? I mean, you'll define what old means and the fact that how you act at whatever given age you are.
Right. When I go to a kegger,
right.
Nobody knows how old I am.
Whenever we have Studio 435, I'm always asking these young musicians come through. I'm like, they're talking about the house parties they play. And I'm like, hey, what's up? Why don't you give Kaufman here an invite? Finally, one of the guys,
Yeah, he did invite you.
He said, hey, give me your email. I gave him my card. I'm like, next time there's a Logan Square illegal house party, let me know, man.
Yeah, Beach Bunny, Beach Bunny that was in here, I followed them on Facebook, and they said that they were having a house party, and it was like a block away from where I lived. I'm like,
you should have gone.
I got to go.
You had to go.
And then, like, it started like at midnight or something.
And let me guess, you went, I'm going to look like a dad.
You're right, I did.
We already judge ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no way am I walking in there with all these 21-year-olds. They would think I'm a cop or something, you know?
You just start asking, who's got the doobie? Where are we at, guys? Who's drinking?
Hey, I actually went to go see Beach Bunny this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Actually, it was the last time we worked together. That's when they played.
How were they? Were they good?
I missed it because they played so early. However...
You were like, this is a young band. They're probably playing at 2 in the morning.
Well, I was figuring that they were going to be playing around 9:30, but they went on, I think, right at 6:30.
What?
Yeah, I was very disappointed because they were awesome.
Yeah.
And I went out and bought their album. I mean, I really like them.
Where were they at?
Martyrs. Lincoln.
Starting at 6:30.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
Before they played here, they played somewhere, actually. So they played early the night they played here and then came here at 10.
Oh, really? So they're
working.
They're defying their age as well. Everyone thinks that the 20-year-olds are playing late. No, they're the early bird. They're playing that 6:30 stuff.
Yeah, I would have been happy if they would have played later. I would have saw them. I was so disappointed. I walked in. I asked the bartender, was Beach Bunny, are they up next? And she said, no, they already played. They probably had another show that night. Who knows? They're probably playing that house party. I don't know.
All right. We have to figure out a way to make that up to you, Eric. I feel like I'm partially responsible for when Beach Bunny played at Martyrs.
Well, I looked them up on Facebook. They play fairly often, so I have a feeling that I'm going to get a chance to see them here sooner than later.
Yeah. All right, more to come here on The Download. Stay with us. Thank you, Eric. It's The Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Johnny Jones is going to join us, young MC here in Chicago. Just signed with Closed Sessions Records, a hip-hop star in the making. Just had a big piece in The Reader this week. Feel like he's got a lot. He's got a new album coming out, so a lot of people are interested in his work. Young kid from Chicago, getting a lot of buzz, so we'll be talking with that artist coming up in the 9:30 segment. At 10 o'clock tonight, we'll play The Worst. Chris Churchill and Amy Sumter will be our guests, 312-981-7200. My next guest is a Chicago writer, a writer who, when going through the process of getting his work published, decided, you know what, enough of this. I'm going to start my own company. Like many of his peers, Jerry Brennan was left with a bitter taste in his mouth about how the traditional publishing industry treats writers. So he set out to become an independent publisher. Today, Tortoise Books is representing the works of independent writers from around the country, from right here in Chicago. The former Columbia University student has now run Tortoise for coming up on 6 years now. And this Friday, we'll be in Conversations at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. The event is called Writing for the Material, and it'll feature Jerry with authors Zoe Zolbrod and Christine Sneed. Sneed was on this program, and just recently her book, The Virginity of Famous Men, was acquired by Tortoise. Jerry Brennan is here tonight, and we're going to talk about the business of publishing. Jerry, great to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Justin. Thanks.
So, yeah, I mean, is that accurate? Is that an accurate story to say that you're a writer and you went through the traditional publishing channels and said, enough of this, I'm going to do it myself?
Pretty much, yeah. It was a long, involved process. What ended up happening was, you know, I had classmates from journalism school who had been traditionally published, and, you know, I had been querying agents with query letters and not getting any responses until I actually reached out to, you know, these friend of a friend type people. And then all of a sudden, this manuscript that I hadn't been getting any responses from, all of a sudden agents were getting back to me and like, oh, this is great. Like, this thing is in tremendous shape. We never see manuscripts that are in this good a shape. But still, nothing was happening with it. And so 2012, I decided at some point, you know, you need to just get stuff off your desk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my gut told me there were other people that were in my same situation.
Predicament. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think about all the independent writers who have similar stories probably come out of the woodwork about just the frustrations that go along with publishing. And I don't think a lot of people know it. I mean, I think there's a correlation to the music industry and perhaps maybe the television or Hollywood that you have to pitch and there's a major publishing industry and a lot that goes into that. But let's talk about that because if you go to your about page, yep, and you say who you are or who we are at Tortoise Books, you essentially say, has this ever happened to you? And you do a great summary of what usually happens when writers try to submit their work.
Yeah, and what I've come to realize, too, after doing this is not only is it first-time authors who end up frustrated, it's people who have been traditionally published in many cases. You know, if they don't earn out their advance or meet somebody's preconceived notions of what their sales should be, they end up having a hard time with subsequent projects. And it's, you know, there's a lot of people that just haven't found their niche in the traditional marketplace. And, you know, you understand it after a while. You mentioned movie stuff. I actually went to a screenwriting pitch fest in Hollywood, and the guy said, you know, the way people get fired in this business is by saying yes to something they should have said no to. Because, like, anybody can say no to Harry Potter and then, you know, a couple years later, oh, who would have thought, you know?
Right.
But if somebody says yes to something that loses a lot of money, and if they keep doing that, eventually they're going to be out of a job. So
no, that's interesting. So it's the same concept when it comes to the traditional publishing route. They always say the joke in Hollywood is, before I say anything about this script, did anyone else like it? You know, that's the idea. Oh, great. What are other people saying about it? I mean, is that the same concept when it comes to publishing industry? There's a fear of missing missing out or missing the mark when it comes to projects?
Oh, certainly. And I think in all entertainment, there's a certain, you kind of look around for validation from other people. They've done these studies where they'll put a violinist from the orchestra like down on the subway and people don't stop to listen just because they don't think, oh, this is somebody who's been validated, who's good at what they do. In publishing, it's the same thing. It's like you people get burned by failure. You know, it's psychology to remember failure more than success. So, you know, people in the industry, they get gun shy, and it's kind of understandable. So
you're a writer. I mean, when you started out and you were at this point in 2012 and you said, I really want to, I'm just going to start my own publishing company. Was that always a goal of yours? I mean, to get into the publishing industry?
It wasn't really, but you got to listen to that inner voice sometimes. And the inner voice was kind of telling me like, you know, don't just let this be about yourself. There's going to be other people. I've grown to get to that point. I think as a writer, it's very easy to have that solitary vision of success. And even then, you're dependent on readers, you're dependent on people to talk enthusiastically about your work. So the solitary thing is really an illusion, because if nobody reads you, then, you're a crazy person who just scribbles on your notepad or whatever. Somehow I had that vision to start something that was bigger than me, and it really has become that over the last 6 years.
For the 6 years, what I really love, and we'll talk about this as well coming up here in the segment, but what I really love about your work is the blog and the site. You're very transparent with what it takes to run a publishing company. Were you talking about the writers' conference you just got back from, and you were talking about how much money it takes to get a table at the writers' conference to sell your wares, and recognizing that the actual benefit, the cost benefit, don't line up, meaning it costs this much money, but you only made this much money in sales, and you go through the formula of that. There's something great, but as a publisher now, do you see a little bit more what the traditional publishing industry is doing behind the curtain that maybe you didn't know as a writer?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Like you really get a sense for, how big of a promotional push, the traditional industry can do. And if you're out there and you can get that kind of support from the traditional industry, I'll be the first to tell you, like, by all means, go for it. I mean, somebody was telling me this weekend that a traditional book with a big promotional push, they'll send out 3,000 free copies.
Yeah.
We haven't sold 3,000 copies of any of our books yet, let alone being big enough to send out 3,000 for free, So you do get a sense of what's behind the curtain and all that. So yes.
Jerry Brennan's my guest. He is the guy behind Tortoise Books. He's going to be at the Bookends and Beginnings this Friday night. The event is called Writing for the Material. It's going to feature Jerry with authors Zoe Zolbrod and Christine Sneed. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back, and continue the conversation here with Jerry. So stay with us. It's a Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Jerry Brennan in studio. He is the man behind Tortoise Books. We're talking about independent publishing, why he got into the business as a writer who really had trouble with the publishing industry at large. And it's changed so much over the years. Determined to start his own company, and he's been doing it for 6 years here in Chicago. Where do you get your authors?
Well, one of my visions for the company was to just accept blind submissions and read query letters and
do all the things that usually the authors don't get from the industry.
Exactly. So it is a mix now of submissions through the website and people that I meet around the local scene and people who hear about us from other ways.
How does Tortoise different than, say, the big publishers in New York City? I mean, obviously, you're both publishing books.
Yeah.
But what separates you from them?
I like to think we give more care and attention than most publishers do. We try to even, respond to the things that we're rejecting with detailed feedback and kind of give people a sense of, like, you know, whether they were close to the mark or whether they missed it by a long shot. And, you know, in just general, try to treat people better than the traditional industry.
For you to be transparent about how, what it takes to run a publishing company, how much does the business rely on paying writers and making sure you're fair when it comes to what the writers are compensated with by being on Tortoise?
Well, it all comes down to fairness. Like, people know when you're treating them well or poorly. And frankly, nowadays, people can go directly to Amazon and, you know, they know that Amazon will pay them reliably, you know, even if they're not earning a lot. You know, Amazon pays like clockwork.
So you don't even have to be in a, you could self-publish and go straight to Amazon?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah. So, and a lot of people do that. But that's the problem, is everybody knows some friend at their office who's just crossing something off their bucket list and putting out some, you know, typo-riddled book.
For you, you know, when I mentioned earlier the idea of the Writers Conference this weekend, where you put a table up and you talk about it in the blog, but how much, what do you have to do as a publishing company? Is it just accepting submissions and printing books, or do you have to, every week you got to be in a different spot and you have to continue to promote the work? Talk about what it takes to be a good publisher.
Well, the very humbling thing about being any kind of small business owner is you realize you have to wear a lot of hats and get out of your comfort zone a lot. You know, you have to be your own business development person. You have to be your own accountant, your own tax person and whatnot. And, there's a lot of it that's, you know, at the end of every month, like going through the bank statement, looking at all the money we've received and figuring out, all right, what came from what author and what do we need to pay out to that author? Based on that. So, yeah, just a lot of...
How many authors do you have on Tortoise?
We've put out 17 books. I think it's about 12 or 13 authors, but yeah, so right about there.
I mean, it's such an interesting story because obviously we've seen the disintegration of the music industry as we knew it. The same with Hollywood. It's all fragmented. Is it the same with the publishing industry? Has it gone through the same changes in the last 20 years that the other forms of entertainment have?
Oh, it certainly has. You've seen, I think Borders going bankrupt was a big deal. Barnes & Noble, a lot of people are, you know, speculating about how long they're going to last. Yeah, it's a very fragmented industry. The percentage of sales from traditional published books has been going down, and our percentages.
But why? Why? I mean, because platforms may have changed, but you still got to pay for a book if you're going to get it on an online version. So what? Why is it actually going down? Because more people are taking the cheaper alternative when it comes to the platform?
There's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of speculation. I saw an interesting interview with the president of Simon & Schuster, who said, you know, my biggest fear is, you know, competition from mobile devices, frankly, because, you know, people can read stuff on their phones nowadays rather than buying a book. So there's, and I do try to pay attention to, you know, what traditional industry people are seeing and what they know, because, you know, they're smart people, you know.
Well, not only, I mean, I always think of the music industry because I think it's similar, but you've seen, and you put on your writer's hat at this point, but you've seen as the industry shrank, and major labels started to recognize that people were getting the music for free, or now it was all singles and not albums, and you're no longer getting $17.99 for the whole package. They started to take it out on artists. Musicians got paid less. A great interview we had on here with the guys from Def Leppard, who were on, who said they didn't go on iTunes for so many years because the offer they got from their record company Universal or whatever, Geffen, or which I forgot which one was them.
Yeah.
They were made because of the sales of Def Leppard. And so they came back and said, we'll give you 19 cents on every download. And they said, that's crazy. I mean, is that the same concept that's happening as the money shrinks? Are artists, are authors, are writers getting less for the work that they may have done the same 10, 15 years before?
Oh, certainly. I mean, that's been a big topic of conversation in the industry, is advances drying up, you know, people not getting the same size of advances that they would have gotten in the past. So that's certainly a part of, the author dissatisfaction with the industry. Yeah.
And so, and a lot of times you can come in, like I know that, you know, some of the authors that you have are because they became frustrated with the industry, or maybe they were on major publishers and they said, this is not working out for me. I don't feel like they care. I'm here. I'm not getting what I thought I was going to get. And you're able to come in and give them at least a platform to publish their work.
Yeah, exactly. We had, you know, our third outside author was had a book on St. Martin's Press, which is a pretty big New York press. And, you know, he just wasn't getting, you know, wasn't getting the support for another book and wasn't, you know, wasn't really happy with them necessarily. So, you know, people want to feel, you know, I wish we could give people, you know, the kind of advances that the industry gives them, but, you know, we can at least show people that they're important and, you know, listen to their concerns and work collaboratively with them. And we've made some pretty good books doing that.
Okay, so I'll give you a minute or two here to just explain the last, give me the last three that you put out.
Well, in addition to Christine Sneed's book, we put
And that's
out,
the paperback version, because yep, that's the, Virginity yeah. of Famous Men, which yeah. we had her on for that heart. That was yeah. a major publisher she was on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we picked up the paperback rights from her publisher because her publisher was kind of dragging their feet about putting out a paperback. The book before that, Gunmetal Blue by Joe Peterson, local author, tremendously talented guy. I actually met him at a bookstore reading and I kind of prospected him a little bit because, you know, he was a friend and I liked him and liked his work. In this book, Kirkus Reviews, which is a, you know, one of the industry trades, said, you know, read this book and said Joe was one of Chicago's, you know, best kept secrets. They said one of the Windy City's best kept secrets.
That's great.
And Bob Hartley's book we'll talk about. He, you know, he pitched his book through the website and, you know, he's, you know, we've still been looking for some of the Chicago coverage, but he's got coverage from his Pittsburgh papers. He's an expat living in Pittsburgh. And his book, North and Central, it's just an amazing book. It continues to sell. We don't need to worry about a bookstore deciding not to carry it because, you know, those concerns are kind of going away nowadays.
Well, it's fascinating. Tortoise Books is the place to find all that. You can find it online. And in studio tonight, Jerry Brennan. He is going to be on stage or as part of an event, a conversation at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. The event's called Writing for the Material. Jerry will be with authors Zoe Zolbrod and Christine Sneed on Friday, coming up here at Bookends and Beginning in Evanston. Jerry, great to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
And good luck with the with the Tortoise.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest is a hip-hop MC from Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for a Johnny Jones.
Johnny, Johnny, I've been running every day. For a swing off with these bitches, their genes coming around my way. Dragonfly, I'm zooming by, soon to dive and make the wave. All my dogs solidify, we PBC away for ways. All them fakes around you, making I cannot identify. Word is full of genocide, politicians try to dignify. But no, I'm the cream of the crop, and the team never stops, just everlast, I know. So they looking for the out, short stop with the ball in my hand, I doubt you own. Look at what you started, look at what you started, yeah, yeah. What's that on my back? You must think I'm a target, yeah. Just keep some track, let's see who's gonna go the farthest. Pharaoh running my like this to now. Pharaoh running through the streets, black boy fights her to a sparrow. I just want my mama riding in the carriage from the ghetto to the Beverly. Out this mud, we've been looking like a special breed, especially when we in our glow, we got that tendency like. Look at what you started, look at what you started, yeah, yeah. Dropping crystals on them, dropping crystals on them. They don't want no problems, they don't want no problems, yeah, yeah. Dropping crystals on them, dropping crystals on them.
Johnny Jones grew up on the south side of Chicago. He put out his first full-length project last year called Eternal Bliss. And he just released his latest EP called Cocoons. Jones is the newest member of Closed Sessions, the great independent hip-hop label here in town. He joins other great names like Kwaku Collins, Jamila Woods, and Webster X, just to name a few. He had a huge 2017, and 2018's already shaping up for the 24-year-old artist. Johnny Jones in studio with me tonight. Johnny, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having
me. Nice to meet you.
Appreciate it.
The EP sounds great. It's
Thank
great.
You.
There's so much I want to talk to you about because, you know, just reading your story. You are a musician and a poet, but this was not necessarily what you went to college for. I mean, you went to the University of Iowa and changed course.
Yeah, I did. I think I went through about three majors before I was like, music is what I want to do. I did psychology my freshman year, then physical therapy sophomore year. Then it was like, nah, this is not for me. So I'm really into sports my entire life because of my dad. So I changed to sports studies major, and I was going to get into journalism. But that didn't really excite me, you know, doing stuff about other people.
Right.
It just didn't excite me. So at the time, I was just not feeling college anymore like that.
Yeah.
But I knew I wanted to do something based in music. And I was like, what if I just went to Columbia? So I transferred.
It's interesting because I feel like that is all of us. Anyone who went to college, you got to your junior year, and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I want to do this. I want to do that. And for you to jump off a cliff and say, you know what? I want to be a musician. I want to do poetry instead. That's a big leap, especially for, and you just talked about the three different majors you were getting into. Was there a lot of anxiety that went along with that? Was it fearful to jump off a cliff and get into music?
Definitely. I think if it weren't for my mother, I wouldn't have done it. I would have stayed and finished and you know, been searching for a job after. But I think what helped me a lot was that she supported me, like, She knew I had a talent for it, and she knows that whatever I put my mind to, I could do it. So it got to a point where I was being harassed a lot by police in Iowa. I had a car while I was out there. It was the worst decision I ever made. I would get pulled over a lot, and I got in trouble, and my mom said, you're not feeling this anymore. Why don't you come back? And she made it so easy and smooth. She was like, come back and live with me. Most mothers would bring, you ain't coming back home with me.
Right.
You know? But she encouraged me to do that. She said, as long as you need to get on your feet and pursue this.
You hear a lot about, you know, when you go to state schools or big schools like the University of Iowa, and you hear this a lot, especially in areas that might be more predominantly white areas, that African-American students have a hard time because they are profiled. It's like if you have a car, like you said, the worst decision you can make to get a car because there is this idea that there's more pressure or more scrutiny put on African-American students than white students at schools like this.
Yeah, and I love the people in Iowa. The people in Iowa are really nice. I guess it was just something that I didn't realize I would have to deal with until I got out there. But even in Chicago, I've been messed with before. But Iowa really opened my eyes, like, oh, okay, this is a red state. Okay.
Gotcha. So you're back in Chicago. Let's talk about your mom, because I read that you learned a lot about music through your mother and the idea of the music, soul music she was listening to. What attracts you to the music that you're producing, what we just heard, and also poetry?
The poetry and just the soulful part of music. She had me listening to Neo Soul when I was younger, Jill Scott, Indy Irie, Flowetry, and Erykah Badu, Lauryn Hill. So she would play that in the car, and I was her little boy. I was just in the passenger seat, just, you know, letting my mind be free to that music and absorb that. And it shaped how I wanted to make music. I wanted to make music to uplift people.
It's so funny, man, because I feel like I could, my story would be like, my mom was listening to Minnie Riperton, possibly Stevie Wonder. I'm like, Lauryn Hill, Erykah Badu. I was already an adult. I was 20 years older than you. A complete aside. But obviously, to be an MC and to be close to the music, close to soul music, that's one part of it. But what about the other inspiration about rappers and people that you grew up with that you wanted to emulate or inspired you to be musical?
Well, you know, like in the early 2000s, it was like the era of just like hits. Everyone had a hit. Everything sounded mainstream. It was a party, you know. So that sort of came in. Growing up with my peers, obviously I would hear it on the radio, but it didn't really catch my attention and make me want to do that. Mm-hmm. I think what made me want that was when I heard 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying. It wasn't the gangster aspect of it. It was the fact that he was saying something. He was saying something that appealed to him, something that he went through. And it was true. And that's what I really liked the most. That's when I wrote my first rap after hearing that.
And when you listen back to this earlier stuff that you did, were you trying to say something, or was it just, I'm going to rap for rap's sake?
I think back then I would talk about, you know, my dad and how he would just mean to me sometimes. And, you know, just about girls that didn't like me back, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, cat, hat, dog.
Right.
Odd rhymes, you know? Right. That was really what it was. And I went through, like, a myriad of rap names. You know, my name was, like, Mike Flames, Ace 101, you know. I loved cards and mythology. So at one point, my name was, like, Poseidon. And, like,
all right. That's good.
That was what I paid attention to in history.
You know, when you were coming up, before you made a choice to really be a professional musician or just to chase that, what do you know about the city of Chicago and what it offered when it comes to rap and comes to hip hop? Because you, as a kid growing up in the 2000s, I mean, there were some great names that are still today inspiring young musicians. But what did you think of and were you inspired by the artists that were working here in town?
I got a lot of my early inspiration when I was, you know, doing my research, listening to just different music from Kanye and Lupe. Lupe was like a really strong influence on
Lupe
me.
Lupe Fiasco, yeah.
And Common also. Those were the early OGs that I looked to and I was like, yo, these guys set the standard for Chicago hip hop. It's soulful. It has a message. It unites people. and it's conscious, but it sounds good. You know, it's uplifting. That's what I did my whole sound around, along with like Bob Marley. I mean, he's not from here, obviously. But when I got a little older, though, I got in tune with rappers like Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa. Those guys were doing the same thing, but just in a modernized fashion. And that's what really made me want to come back here also, because I saw what they did. And it was like, they can do that. I can do that also to a degree. I'm telling my story, though.
Well, Closed Sessions does it and other places. And I want to talk about your relationship with them as well. But for a long time, Chicago was known as conscious rap, the backpack kind of rap that, you know, you had the East and West Coast, and this is what was Chicago. But in the last 10, 15 years, you have seen complete change where you had the drill scene on the south side of Chicago, you have the backpack rap still and with Chance and others, but there just seems to be much more coming out of Chicago. Chicago has become a hotbed. Does that change the way you do your work when you see that there's so many different styles of rap coming from the place that you grew up?
Definitely, 100%. I think that you need to be versatile as an artist. You have to transcend what being a rapper is. And we've seen examples of that. People like Drake, he was one of the first people to bring the whole package. Rapping, singing, bringing a melody. He can tell you something about himself, or he can tell you a message that you need to hear that might help you, inspire you on your day. He started that. So I think it was important for me to want to do that and keep it true to Chicago.
Yeah. Johnny Jones is in studio tonight. His new EP is out now. He's a member of Closed Sessions. We're going to talk about the relationship with the record label and also about the new music coming up here right after the break. Johnny Jones on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, hip-hop MC. Johnny Jones in studio tonight. His newest EP is out right now. It's called Cocoons. You have Eternal Bliss, which is the first full-length project, and I found it interesting that it's almost referred to as a bedroom project. And a lot of people, when you read that, you're like, I know what that is, because I've talked to a lot of artists that have come through. I wouldn't necessarily know it otherwise, but tell us what a bedroom project is. That's essentially what Eternal Bliss was.
So we started making it, and we were working on it at the time we were in a garage. We had a garage set up, and Alexi, my manager, it was like next to his house. We had a pretty good setup there. It was a band that was in there before, so they had padding all over.
Oh, that's great.
They had it set up nice. We just moved in some couches off the street, and we were in there for about a year. And when I started working on Eternal Bliss, I came up with the concept in there, hanging out in there about 10 to 15 hours a day.
What's the biggest difference between Eternal Bliss, which I listened to today? What do you see as the difference between that project and the new project?
I would definitely say I've improved the cohesiveness of it. Like, Eternal Bliss was an experiment for me. I wanted to do something more house-based, more bouncy, but I wanted to keep the hip-hop element. But I didn't want to get boxed in as an artist that did that. So I wanted to do something a little bit more dynamic, something a little more close to home and being able to tell you what my message is.
A lot of the message is interesting because listening to it, you pick up different references to Chicago, of course, but student debt, student loans show up in your music. Yeah. I mean, you talk about a lot of things that you as a 24-year-old artist who has some college under your belt is dealing with. How important is that for you to speak to the issues of your life that are relatable to kids your age?
Yeah, it's really just to let them know that I understand what they're going through, because at certain points we all have been 20 and eating noodles. You know what I'm saying? We've all had to deal with a certain point of where you look up and college is almost over, but you've got like $100K you might have to pay the government. I think me relating to people will be able to help inspire them, because me relating to you is just a way of me to get across my message and tell you, but look, there's this on the other side, mm-hmm. You know?
I think about the music and what you're doing, of course, and the relationship with Closed Sessions. We've had a lot of the Closed Sessions artists. I mentioned Kwaku Collins and Jamila Woods, and they're becoming household names in Chicago, especially in the independent world. How important is it for you to be associated with an independent record label like Closed Sessions?
It was a dream of mine. When I was in Iowa, you know, working at a bar, and I wasn't really into the scene anymore. I was paying attention to Chicago heavily. And this is around the time when they had Alex Wiley. They built him to a certain point. It was like, wow, this artist is big, he's independent, he's great. Then they did it with Kwaku. You know what I'm saying? And just being able to see that they were able to build artists and cultivate them, get them to their target demographic. That's what I looked at when it came to getting involved with them, because it was like, a lot of labels care about just money. What can you do for them? Mm-hmm. It was really them being like, look, let's help you build. And that's why they're family. Like, I spend almost every day there. So it was also important for me to be able to just be around them, you know. Most artists don't even interact with their label because they, you know, what's that relationship then, you know? And also, they had to get the stamp of approval from my mom before anything.
Really?
You know? Yeah, my mom came to an event, and they were there, and she was like, they met, and she approved, you know, because of the, they're genuine people. So it was a dream of mine. When I came to Chicago, I was like, I'm going to give myself 2 years. I'm going to get signed to Close Sessions. And this is the second year.
For you to be from Chicago and to be in hip-hop, it's obvious that there's a lot of misunderstandings and I would just say a lot of stereotypes when it comes to rap music coming from Chicago. When the whole country looks at it, they think, well, it's South and West Sides of Chicago. It's going to be all gangster rap or it's going to be about violence or things that they only know from the surface or from headlines that are written in different places. Right. What do you want to say about your town? What do you want to say about Chicago being an artist from the South Side?
I want to say that our city is beautiful. I was just talking to Alexi earlier. We were over by the lake just taking pictures and it was like, I love this city. I wouldn't trade it. You know, growing up on the South Side, yeah, I wasn't well off, but everything about my city was beautiful to me at the time. You know, having to do with the corner on the Cobb on the corner, having the liquor store right there where it was always a wise OG telling you about life, telling you stuff that you didn't know, that your pops wasn't telling you about. You know, having the guy inside the liquor store, you know, he would just let you get free stuff, you know, sometimes, you know, and it was really cool. But I moved a lot around the city. So me seeing the different areas around the city, I always saw that it was just, it felt like everything about the city is love. But they don't really portray that in the news. Mm. Yeah, there's hate. Yeah, there's hate. And there's the death toll speaks for itself. But I want to show that the city is beautiful, every part of it. Every part of it.
Johnny Jones' new EP is called Cocoons. It's out now. The 24-year-old artist had a nice 2017, and he's looking forward to 2018. Johnny, great to meet you, and I look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
I've been feeling like a pharaoh. Meditating, feeling in my spirit by the meadows. You was there for me when I was lost in the desert. Never take for granted, see my mind, I expanded and branded. Good vibes, tell it to its pinks when you pray 5 times to the east. I've been searching for the love in my city. I was roaming down King Drive, running from the belly of the beast. And they call that the low end, that's where my blood lived. I was elusive like my cousins. Is this corrupt when there's no rules? And they got knives in they shirt next to serpents that lurk. I just take it and I put that on the Pro Tools, hoping that you gain from my losses. If I'm king, I can never be subjected to an office, and when they put me in my coffin, they didn't tell I had gold in the soul. When they offered
pyramids, to my soul, getting near with it.
I feel it getting closer.
Pyramids, like liberal when I finish it.
It's the phone number. We're about to play The Worst here. Amy Sumter and Chris Churchill are in studio tonight, 10 o'clock hour. This is, of course, one of my favorite segments. We don't get to do this as much as I'd like, only because the Blackhawks play a lot on Tuesday nights. But, of course, this is where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. I've got a couple of worse. I don't know. I got to organize my thoughts. I always feel like I get to this moment. I'm like, what was I just complaining about?
Mm-hmm.
What is the worst?
Write them down.
I know. I got to write them down. You know what's the worst? Places that don't accept cash.
There's places that don't accept cash anymore?
In this building that serves tea.
Really?
Jason and the...
Scorchers?
Argonauts?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Really? Today, no cash?
So I'm in the spot where I'm like, okay, I had from the weekend and going to the Hawks game, I had extra cash.
I had,
today when I was at home, I'm like, I fished out of quarters and a dollar, and I'm like, I've got the $2.80 that it cost to get a coffee. $2.80, give me a break. And I'm like, all right, great. I got it perfect, exact change. So I'm like, oh, I'll treat myself since I've got the exact change. I went over there, and the cashier's like, oh, we don't accept cash. It's a cashless company. And I know we have the, I know that this is an issue because I know this has played out at some other places in Chicago. I think Sweet Greens and Epic Burger and other places, they don't do cash either. A lot of the newer places, and Alderman Ed Burke had kind of come forward and said, we got to stop that, you know, because that's kind of like discrimination to people who don't have
credit cards,
credit cards, yeah. and debit cards. Mm-hmm. But I just I was kind of always agnostic to the issue. I was always like, well, I get it. I never pay cash, and it's faster, and it protects the people who are working there, and no one's going to rob them. But when it happened to me, Pete, it happened to me, and I was
now
like,
gotta change now the I'm rules. Like, what? Yeah.
I felt so humiliated that my U.S. tender, my U.S. currency,
yeah,
did not work. It would not be accepted. I'm like, it's not a stamp. It's not like I'm trying to give them a cashier's check. It's not like a traveler's check and or a gift certificate that expired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was dollar bills.
What did you stomp out on principle?
I did worse. I moped. I didn't stomp out. I paid for it with my debit card, and then I wasn't as appreciative when I got the coffee. When they gave it to me, I'm like, instead of thank you, I was like, real class. I showed them, Pete.
But because there's a lot of times I'll boycott like an ATM because I don't want to pay the fee. Right. But then I'll like travel like 45 minutes out of my way to it's like, you know, on principle, I'm wasting my time on principle. Like, what am I doing? Saving $1.50?
Yeah. All right, save it. Save it for the worst coming up here.
It's going down.
All right, it is the download, 720 WGN, and you know the music. It's time for the worst, 312-981-7200. This, of course, a segment where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. That's right. We've got a couple of prizes tonight. We've got the a pair of tickets to the Chocolate, Wine, and Spirits Expo.
Ooh.
That's good. That's nice. Actually good.
That's all the best things.
Yep.
That's all
and the best We got things. The indoor weather station. We got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. We got a lot to give away
An
for you just to complain.
Station.
Indoor weather station.
Is that something Tom Skilling is...
It has nothing to do with Tom Skilling, but
everything
it makes you feel like you're Tom Skilling.
Oh, okay. Good.
It's that kind of thing.
That's got to feel great.
Yeah. It really is. All right, let me introduce our panel tonight. Chris Churchill is here. Chris
hey, what's
Churchill,
going on?
Comic, also a long time trolley driver.
I am the Rick
town.
Grimes of Chicago Trolley and Double Decker Company.
I don't even know what that means, but that's great.
20 years. I'm the only one left.
He's got Sketch Revolution at Under the Gun coming up here. Also, some other projects. We'll get to them all tonight.
Absolutely.
Chris, thanks for playing.
Absolutely.
Amy Sumter is back. Sup? Amy, good to see you.
It's good to see you as well.
Amy, stand-up comedian, and longtime member of the Cates, yes. Which is up at the bookseller in Lincoln Square.
Boom.
The Beastie Boy cover band.
Mm-hmm. Yep, all she's sorts crafty.
She's crafty. There's so many great things that Amy's been involved. The two of you, I didn't know you knew each other.
For years.
For years. And
I mean, like among best friends, like seriously.
You're working on a fun project, a textbook about approximate math. What am I missing here? Did I get it right?
So I've been working with a dumb idea for years, and for some reason
that doesn't sound like you.
I know,
Chris.
It's so out of character.
And the reason why Amy's involved is because Amy's the one who always laughs at it the hardest.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
I used to do a routine when I would do the occasional comedy show or stand up show about really defining like approximate math, like a few, what a couple is versus what a few is.
Yes, because we had the conversation where I said a couple once and you were like, no, that's a few. Like that we got into it and not into it like we were fighting, but I was like, wait, right. You think a couple is this? And
So I've been teaching at Northeastern Illinois University lately, teaching communication. So I thought that it would be kind of fun to clarify those terms,
yes.
But as stupidly as possible. So we've got my friend Tina, who's going to do the photography, Tina Smothers, and I think we've got my friend Chris Hauser from Actual Murderers playing. It's going to be like photographs in a textbook with all the words, and she's going to be the one who's learning approximate math, and Chris is going to be the one who's stuck to the old math, and I'm going
to
be the professor.
All right, we're looking
forward to it. Because my face is a cartoon, so we're going to use that face.
All right, let's play the words. 312-981-7200. Of course, text already coming in tonight. You can join in. We're playing for prizes tonight, but we start the way we start every week here on The Worst with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, what's the worst, buddy?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
Trying to find the garbage can at someone else's house. Is it hidden? Is it under the sink? Which drawer?
You start getting into some private business.
Yeah. Pulling over everything in the kitchen.
Did I just throw it into recycling? Come on.
Oh, yeah. That's always the hard part, too, like to decipher their recycling.
It always just goes in my pocket when I'm in somebody else's house. I got a coat full of tin cans. Yeah, tin cans, by the way. Not aluminum ones.
Got a napkin full of I don't know what I ate.
Exactly.
I get it.
All right, that's good. That's a great way to start. Amy, what do you got for the worst this week?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
Having to work for money. Come on.
Come on.
Why can't we all just be independently wealthy?
Yeah, right?
Wake up when we want to wake up, not have to wake up early. Like, I shouldn't have to get up ever. Like, I should just naturally wake up in the morning.
That's exactly why they came up with Obamacare. And that was really it for the people who didn't
really
want to
work.
That's
why they hate it.
Right. That's why they hate it.
That's why they hate it. Guess what? That's why I love it.
That's good. That's good.
Chris, what do you got? What's the worst?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
The worst is it's when you're having this great dream about something going really well in your life, everything's going great, and then you wake up in your own stupid life. Isn't that disappointing?
That's such a Churchillism, as I say.
Like, you ever, like, yeah. I've even, like, I love my wife. I've been married to her for 20 years now coming up. But I promise you, I've had entire relationships with other people in a dream. And then I wake up and go, oh, yeah, I live in this apartment.
This is my life.
I'm not Madonna's husband. You know, whatever.
This is not my beautiful wife.
Right.
This is not my beautiful house.
Wedding the days. Exactly.
The worst is good dreams. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, the worst is good dreams. Exactly. Because you have to wake up into your regular life.
We were talking right before the segment started about the worst. good. Get that out there. Okay. The worst is cashless, places that are now cashless. Across the way, we were talking about the tea company that today I went in. I had exact change, Amy. I finally had it. I pulled it out. It was one of those days, that's a miraculous thing where you pull out and you're like, wow, I have $2.80. I have exactly what it's going to cost to get a cup of coffee over there. I'm like, this is a brilliant day. Like, the world has aligned. And I put the money and some dribblings, whatever else was in my pocket, and whatever, in this in the person's hand. And they're like, yeah, you can have this junk back. I don't even know what this is. We're a cashless place.
Were you like, this is U.S. currency, ma'am or sir?
Right.
Or whatever you decide to go by.
What are you doing there?
Why aren't you taking my U.S. currency?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I should call somebody. I should call the U.S. currency people.
Oklahoma,
the
come
treasurer
on.
Or
like,
something.
For real.
Yeah, somebody's in charge of making
sure
the
Federal Reserve needs to be on the line now.
I don't understand because I just remember that whole thing about $2 bills or a stamp and that you could use a stamp because it's a actual tender. Like, all these kind of things are protective
like
of currency.
Mistake.
And I just feel like someone just decided at some point where they're like, nah, we'll just use cards. You can't do that, right?
I don't think you can.
I feel like it's like when you're in a cab and they're like, oh, we don't take credit cards. I feel like it's the same for cash only.
Shouldn't there be like one guy that works at a place that only takes cards who has to accept money from you and he pays with the card for you later, at cash out at the end of the night?
But it also like makes me nervous because so many people, like, you know, all those people that don't know how to write or even do cursive anymore, is it that they don't know how to count the money? Is that where we're at?
My son is 10 years old and I wonder, I mean, they did the coin.
Yeah.
The one day on coins, what's a quarter and what's a nickel. But it did feel pretty obsolete. Like when you're like, tell us
what wasn't even like you were
cents.
Giving him a silver Kennedy. You know what I mean? Like, you were like, this is a dime. Like, you might see this one day. Quarter. You're going to live alone, have an apartment. Guess what? You're going to need to know what these are, big guy.
Well, he knows quarters because when he goes to the Home Depot, he'll always be like, Dad, can I get a quarter? Because they have the gumball machine, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's very interesting that he will say, hey, Dad, give me a quarter. And I'll be like, I don't have one. And he'll be like, no, you have them in the car. And I'm like, not anymore. Everything is now
iPass
and all that kind of stuff. I go, I'm not collecting the coins there anymore to put it there. And then you pop it open and there is one. You're like, oh, except for right now. Here you go.
Yikes.
Right.
Telling you, I will.
No, I have a big pile. I have a big pile of change.
Yeah.
Actually, being married we actually have several piles of change in different jars, different mason jars, because we like mason jars. Anyway, but I'm trying to get rid of these without taking them and pay the 10% at the.
But if you go to the Coinstar and you get the Amazon gift card, you get the full amount.
I'm not giving Jeff Bezos any more of my money.
Amazon is the reason they don't take cash.
I'm trying to every day gradually pay down a little bit more of that change off that mountain, and I go over here to try and give them my change, and they don't even want my money.
And I was going
to
say as well, I had this issue where I brought one of my mason jars of coins to the local bank, and they said, we don't do that service. We will not count this
which
money for you.
Which is ridiculous.
You know, all right.
Yeah. Legal tender.
Legal tender conversation part of the worst is over. Chris Churchill and Amy Sumpter in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get to your texts and calls. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
Playing the worst tonight, 312-981-7200. We're going to get to the text. Amy Sumter and Chris Churchill are in studio tonight, our panel of judges. And we are ready to get to the text. There's a lot that have come in, so let's get to them here. Why don't we start with 773 that says, the worst is when you pay for parking, and then when you come back to your car, and you have a ticket before the time ran out.
Because
how is that possible?
How do you complain? How do you prove it? Like,
right?
How much documentation do you have to prove
that? You could take pictures of your cell phone, but then you have to contest the ticket with proof. So now you just created work for yourself, even though you paid.
Yeah,
you
know? That's exactly why you have an app.
Exactly.
Is to not have to do all that.
Exactly. I would just think that there'd be, not unlike when you go to Uber or Lyft, and something goes wrong and you can contact them, and they're quickly, because of customer service, they're like, yo, man, that's cool. We'll give you your money back.
Exactly.
Or whatever. Like, if it gets to the point where you have to actually start dealing with the city to get that ticket rescinded,
exactly.
That's terrible.
That's awful.
I get like a real like justice thing going. I get so, like, I have to go see a therapist when something like that happens. This is not right.
You know? You'll love this one. I had this happen to me. And this is an old, I feel like this is right on the line where society breaks down. This is where we lose it. Came out, I was doubled right around here. I was getting a coffee. It came out, and there was a ticket writer right by my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, whoa, I'm here. I got the coffee. And she gives me a wink like, all right, you're good. I get, 2 months later, I get a ticket in the mail. Not a ticket, a notice saying that I did not pay the ticket.
Oh, my.
Which I never received. Yes, it was double. But my point being that she never gave it
to you.
Yes.
Right.
That's happened to me before.
That's
I got
crazy.
A red light ticket, and I'd moved, and by the time it got to me, they're like, this is your like second or third notice. And I was like, I never got the first notice. Yeah.
I just feel like maybe it's an old wives' tale. I don't know that if they don't give you the ticket, it doesn't count.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you and I have talked about this before, where there's this thing where they boot you on Wednesday. And then the next day, they come around, they boot everybody right before the no parking here restriction, so they can ticket you for that immediately afterwards.
Yeah, they give you both.
Yeah.
That's the same like when you get towed. You get towed and you got a ticket on top of it.
That's ridiculous.
All right, let's keep going here.
We're so angry. It's not even funny. We're so angry.
708 says, the worst are people who use duct tape as a form of car repair.
No, that's the best.
I think that's smartest. I was behind a Benz last night that had it on the corner, and I couldn't tell until I got real close. And I was like, I'd take my hat off to you, sir.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. But most of the time, the very organized or deliberate duct tape people, they're fine. Mm-hmm. It's the people that are disorganized or just not. It doesn't look good.
After somebody has a car accident, they're trying to do body work with different tinted clear tape, you know? Well, I'll put the orange up here because it would be orange. The red down here because that's where the brake light's supposed to be.
They're trying to contour their car.
Yeah.
Trying
to contour it. Give it cheekbones.
All right. Moving on. 708 says, let's see here. I lost it here. The worst is having, this is Mary. The worst is having Against the Wind by Bob Seger running through my mind.
That is pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
I'm not a huge Bob Seger fan in general, so it just there are parts of the song you want to sing over and over again, but just because it hurts you, you know.
We're just now for in honor of Mary, we're just going to play this on a loop throughout the entire worst tonight.
Good night, Justin. We'll see you next time you call us.
No, we'll continue. We'll just keep the music going.
Become You're the Worst. I love it.
708 says, we reuse the paper bags from the grocery store in our kitchen trash can. And the worst is when the bottom of the paper bag breaks on the way to the large can in the garage. Like, it's so sturdy. That is gross.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of those things you need to work on yourself about. Yeah. You can plan that better.
Well, I live where I have a duplex.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I always fear that if I take the garbage out, and my biggest fear in life, it's really my biggest fear in life, that there's going to be a hole in the bag and it's going to leak down the stairs because carpeting down to the...
Oh, carpeting. Yeah.
It hasn't happened, but it's my biggest fear.
Oh.
And there's other things, you know, just mortality and just, you know, just fear in general.
Yeah,
but this one takes the cake.
Yeah.
Well, with me and my wife, we have birds. We have parrots, right? And they have their bird toys, like most people do.
Yeah, right.
And they have their bird toys. And every so often, we're coming up the stairs, and we're like, how did this piece of bird toy get onto the second floor landing? We don't live here, you know? And I know exactly. And I'm like, for some reason, we feel like we're an imposition on people because we have birds. So then when we see a piece of a bird toy on the stairs, it's like, they're going to evict us, you know?
They know it was us.
That's it, Chris. You know what? You and your birds. Gotta go. It's like the beginning.
You
of
and your bird toys all over the landings.
All right, 630 says, the worst is forgetting to record my favorite show and then having to watch it on demand and not being able to fast forward through all the political BS.
What political BS happens
on
demand?
No, but that is something that's the worst.
Yeah.
Is really? That the political ads are now on like the Hulu.
Terrible. Yeah,
that
I'm sorry
is
for
the
you,
worst.
Person.
Yeah. So you
no,
know
you're
what? Yeah.
That's crazy.
You can't run away anymore.
You can't, and you're absolutely right. If you have to sit through like six of those, yeah, they will do six yeah. of them in a row.
Oh, hey, man. It's awful.
What? I was watching, I forgot what I was watching. It was Atlanta. So Atlanta is on FX, right? And I didn't tape it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. It didn't tape. I love it. So I'm so 43. I'm like, I didn't tape it.
It didn't even faze me. Yeah. And then like halfway through it, I was like, yeah. Lady in her 40s. I was like, we're not supposed to say that word anymore.
Can't say that anymore. But I realized that they have just the unwritten rule of the on demand was that there'd be less commercials.
Right.
Three commercials, maybe yeah. two.
But
sometimes.
Like those three commercials, though, yeah. are like 5 minutes a piece. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The Atlanta, the FX, full on. Seven. I count seven
what?
Each break. Yep. They are full God. On. They're like, everyone wants to watch
full
the show.
Full on commercials.
You are going to get it like it is on regular TV now.
They're like, listen up, 40 year olds.
Yes. Well, sometimes I like
to 2018, we're there. We were always worried about when was on demand going to catch up. Now they're like,
we gotcha.
And you're going to get full commercials on this.
Well, sometimes I like to put the earphones on when I go to bed at night and listen to YouTube, like meditation, like binaural beats and stuff. I love that stuff, right?
Okay.
But it always starts with an ad for something.
Mix.com.
And then like, yeah, and then like you're an hour in and suddenly you wake up to like cat's bot litter, you know. You know,
who does he think he is?
Oh,
and bashing.
I was just out of my body just a second ago, and now you're bringing me back with that.
The most local Cook County race talking about the NRA, and you're like, all right. All right, we've got a lot to do tonight. 815 says, the worst is realizing you need to use the bathroom right after you've finally gotten comfortable in bed. That's a classic worst. That one shows up.
I'm afraid that continues, and you'll get used to it.
Right? And
630,
we'll take a break after this, but 630 says, the worst must be, this Jerry, he says, must be poor mid-school students trying to memorize the president's cabinet members for an upcoming social studies test.
That's a good one, Jerry. I like that one.
All right, much more here. 312-981-7200. Amy Sumter and Chris Churchill are here, and we are playing the worst. The second half coming up. There's still a lot of prizes on the line, so stay with us.
It's going down, y'all. The worst come the worst. The worst come the worst. The worst come the worst. My people come first.
Amy Sumter, Chris Churchill in studio. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A ton of texts to get to. Amy, of course, one of the great comedians with the Cates, which you can see at the bookseller at Lincoln Square. Full of stand-up plays all over the place. Chris is going to be with Sketch Revolution at Under the Gun coming up here, as well as some other stuff. On April 29th, you're doing a fake tour of Chicago.
Absolutely. I figured after 20 years of doing real tours of Chicago, I would give whoever wanted a completely nonsensical, completely fictitious tour of downtown Chicago.
I love it.
Yes.
Good. April 29th.
With
just literally. Be anywhere. Be on the street corner.
It's going to be at the Haymarket. We're going to start at the Haymarket at 6 o'clock that Sunday night. And talk to Don Hall and David Himmel. Get them in here again.
All
ask
right.
them questions.
Ask them questions. Yeah. Okay, good. 312-981-7200. The worst, 773 says, is sitting on a train with 50 empty seats around you, and the guy sits next to you with garlic breath and smelling like he hasn't bathed in 2 weeks.
Mm. I feel like that's assault.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
630 says, the worst is when you have to be on medical diet for 2 weeks before a procedure, eating nasty food that only makes you want to die. And after being on the diet for 2 weeks, the day before the scheduled procedure, can you guess? They call and say they have to cancel. Next available is in a week, so you have to do the nasty diet for another week.
That's bad. That's real bad.
That's bad,
that's
right?
Ugh. All right. What's nasty about that diet? I want more specifics.
Yeah, right.
Because, like, if it's just eating, like, vegetables and stuff, I'm like, come on.
Yeah, come
we
on.
We can all do that, yeah. Okay?
But maybe it's all boron supplements.
But, yeah, if it's, like, drinking barium every night, like, right. If you have to drink barium every night, barium. Like, I feel for
right.
you.
Yeah, right.
630 says, the worst is having a coworker, or even worse, your boss, who tell you they quit smoking and then continually ask, almost begging you for a cigarette.
That's when cigarettes become $10 a piece.
I remember the late Del Close, when we would take his class. He wasn't smoking officially. He never had cigarettes, but he would walk from table to table, putting a quarter on the table and taking people's cigarettes.
A quarter?
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
That's a Chicago tradition to have a Del Close story.
I think it is.
There you go, buddy. Yeah. That's
awesome. Thank you. Am I a Chicagoan now, Justin?
Chicago.
21 years.
It took 21 years, but you're in. 847 says, the worst is when my husband throws the head of a dirty string mop that I just washed the floor with into the washer with our regular laundry.
I'm sorry, honey.
Underwear. It ends up smelling like Mr. Clean.
Ooh, yeah, that's bad news. Ugh. Wait, Mr. Clean the stuff or Mr. Clean the guy?
I think Mr. Clean the stuff.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Hopefully the guy.
He seems cool, doesn't he? He seems like he smells
he's
great.
He's gotten real hot right? Lately.
Yeah, lately.
I know he's a cartoon, but, you know.
He's a good-looking cartoon, I'm not going to lie.
Desperate older lady looking for love in all those dirty mop areas.
It's a new commercial they're working on. New ad line. 708 says, the worst is when you travel through Indiana and you try to figure out what time it is.
Oh, that is the worst.
Yeah.
That is
it's
the worst.
It's so strange to think we're that close to the Eastern time zone that it zips in and out.
I was gonna say, what, but they don't even change, do they? They hold to it, right? Don't they?
Yeah, but they have because
areas
they have it gets strange because there's part of Indiana that's in the central time zone, that's Chicago, that will turn over with daylight saving. So if you're in Northwest Indiana, Valpo, those kind of areas, you're on Chicago time.
I'm already upset at what Indiana's doing to us right now in the studio. Like, we're having this discussion.
Because don't even get started with booze on Sundays. They now...
Yeah, they could do that now.
Yeah, they can do that now.
My band played out in South Bend recently, and they were already really excited because they're like, next Sunday we get to drink. I was like, what? They also lined up for the bar.
Really?
It was weird. Like, there was a line... bar. It was weird. Sorry, Indiana.
Sunday morning.
You were very good to me, but come on.
I don't know if Chicago does this or not because I'm not that much of an avid Sunday morning drinker. But do they still do the thing where you can't buy booze
certain
time on
until like noon or something like that?
Because I think because I used to bartend at a restaurant, and we could start serving at 10 because we serve more food than booze.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think like bars and
stores. It only affects you is going to a Bears game.
Yeah.
Because you would go down to the South Loop and you'd be at the South Loop Club.
Oh,
and
sure.
Yeah. Like, we got coffee.
No,
I didn't come to this bar at 9 for coffee.
Come on, give me a little Baileys and my coffee.
And everyone's at Kitty O'Shea's right now.
Right.
Everyone.
All right, 708 says, the worst is after waiting in line for 15 minutes at the Jewel, realizing you forgot something very important and with 10 people behind you.
Mm.
Oh, that is the worst.
That's rough. Or when your wife texts you from the parking lot when you're walking to your car after having bought everything.
Yes, yes.
I love you, Kathy.
I think Kathy's going to ask for a divorce after
she's got
today.
A lot of, really.
Well,
really
she's Sicilian. She's not going to ask for a divorce. She's a real till death do us part kind of girl.
224 says the worst is being a dystopian writer right now. I've had to rewrite sections in my work several times in the past year. Maybe I should just write kids' books instead.
Dystopian kids' books would be fantastic.
630 says the worst is leaving Facebook when you're sick of seeing all the BS you don't care about, only to have people who posted that stuff start sending you it in group text instead.
Yeah. My wife, again, with my wife, she told me to stop telling her what was on Facebook because that's the reason why she's not on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Sorry.
I can actually hear her saying that.
That's yeah.
When I last year, I took Facebook off my phone, right?
Yeah.
And I went on a spring break.
Okay.
And it was the family went to California. I talked about it on the show that I didn't have my, so I didn't log into Facebook for whatever it was, 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
By the fourth day, they were sending me emails.
Oh, no.
They send you, hey, you know what you're missing? And they start to get real clever. And
I didn't know they did that.
Did you see your friend Chris Churchill said ... And then you got to click through if you want to click through. They were like hardcore selling me to come back.
Wow, that's nuts. I didn't know that was going on.
Yeah, so they do not like it when you try to, when you don't
log in. Don't you feel trapped in right now with all these things? Yeah,
it's a little scary,
it's
right?
Creepy. Yeah.
All right, so.
It's bad enough that your phone is listening to you
and
that the phone knows what I want to look up. You know what I mean? The phone knows that I'm a terrible speller.
Like, why
so when I was spelling Tribune Tower, I didn't spell it correctly because I have giant thumbs, right?
Right.
And it was like, do you mean Tribune Tower? And I was like, goo, how does it, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What if you're in a hurry, like having an emergency, and you're trying to text somebody something really important, and you keep getting auto-corrected to something stupid? And you
that always happens to me.
I could have saved this poor child if you hadn't replaced the word ducking the whole time.
Yeah, I've never wanted to say ducking. Never.
Never, ever have I wanted to say ducking.
Never. Think about it. The autocorrect is saving society by cutting down on our texting swear words. So
no, because I'll go back. I'll go back and correct it multiple times.
I will.
Okay,
we're gonna learn this, Siri.
It's amazing because I saw Tig Notaro and she had a bit about how she actually didn't know how to spell diarrhea. Literally, you just have to say D-I-A and it just there? Like pops up, and you're like, this phone knows.
309 says the worst is trying to get away with the walk of shame while carrying your CPAP machine.
Whoa. Oh,
that's garbage. That's fake. That's a comedy bit, right?
That's a bit, right?
It can't be a walk of shame. Like if you knew ahead of time that you were staying over.
Yeah, why'd you bring your CPAP?
Three kinds of worsts.
Okay.
There's the worst that is humorous, that you're like, that's awesome, that happened to you, that's hilarious. Good observation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There'll be the real worst, like cancer. You'll get those where you're like, that's the worst. Literally, that's you played the game, right? And then there's a third that are like, I have a joke.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I made this up.
And I'm going to nail it.
I made it.
Those are three kinds of worsts.
Yep.
The worst is when it snows in March after we just changed the time. My brain feels scrambled. That is true.
That is true, yeah.
Okay,
I was actually very surprised by the snow today because it was not pretty supposed cool, though, to snow.
But it was cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was neat.
773, this is a good one. The worst is when jury duty notice begins on the first day of my new job. Could you imagine that?
Wow.
That is the worst. Like if you're like, I got a new job, I'm looking forward to it. I can't come in Monday.
Or possibly ever for the next 16 weeks.
I was a standby juror for my 40th birthday. Literally. And I've been inside of seven courtrooms already.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have never see one.
I've been inside of seven
courtrooms. Wow. So I've gotten jury duty more times than anybody else.
Do you get picked for the jury?
I got picked once, and then they did federal, like our call for federal. And when they put me in the box and they were asking questions, like I got so nervous. And people are always like, say that, then they won't choose you. I'm like, no, that doesn't. They're smarter than that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that was right when like Harry Potter had been released. It's like, what do you do? And I was like, I like Harry Potter. And then later on, I realized, I was like, oh my God, they totally thought I was slow. Like
they're like, all right, you gotta go.
That's I was like, I got excused because they thought I was slow. And then I was like, ah, cool, HP all the way, yo. So, it was pretty embarrassing. But
that is embarrassing.
I feel for you, Jerry.
I will say,
man.
I have always heard that about the, what you can say.
Oh, sure.
You gotta be careful because they're onto you.
All the real key, if you really just want to, if you're straight up looking for lies, just say you're a journalist. They don't like journalists.
Oh.
Or just say you have diarrhea chronically. You don't have to spell it. You don't have to spell it.
Well, I have this lucky streak of just like backing into or out of situations accidentally. I mean, I've actually like almost been shot before and it's all because I'm an idiot. Like I one time stopped and talked to a guy and asked him if he was okay. It turned out I was blocking him with my trolley. The guy on the other side had a mask and a gun, and me stopping and asking that guy if he was okay. Guy drove off through the stockyards and lived to fight another day.
Oh.
And I
shut the front door.
And the trolley driver behind classic me was really
Churchill.
Mad at me.
This is classic Churchill.
Classic Churchill. Almost getting shot in the stockyards.
I almost got shot, but I just had a conversation and everything's okay. That's classic Churchill.
I'm naive. Yeah.
Chris Churchill, Amy Sumter in studio tonight. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. Still got a lot of texts to get through. And we will come back and we will pick the winners tonight. Who's going to get the tickets to the Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo, the Desktop Indoor Weather Station, and the Lou Malnati's gift certificate. So stay with us.
It's going down.
That is the worst. Wow, that's, no one wants to hear that. I had Professor Al Genie on tonight. They used Stephen Hawking as an example about aging and how.
Oh, that's terrible.
How old was he?
In his 70s by now, though. He outlasted all the experts like said he would live, you know.
That's amazing.
Whatever sentence I was trying to put together.
No,
there.
But that's amazing. Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah, it really is.
I hope that the stories of that are fake news.
I don't think so either.
So we'll find out coming up to the 11 o'clock hour. Eric will have more on the possible death of Stephen Hawking. Wow. All right. Crazy. So we continue to play the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. We got a couple of worsts that we think are front runners. Amy Sumter and Chris Churchill are in studio tonight. 312-981-7200. Let's keep going. 773 says the worst are goodbye cakes and pink slips at the White House. Yeah, I guess so.
That sounds like a bit.
773.
Is it the worst?
Here we go. The worst non-alcoholic drinks.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had a segment lined up at one point. I was really interested, and it just kind of fizzled, but no pun intended, about that there's a whole new craze about mocktails.
Yes.
The cocktail craze has turned into, this would be great without alcohol.
But I feel like it'd be great with all the alcohol. You know what I mean?
It sounds like a bunch of people who are wanting to remain infants to me.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. If you have a problem, that's wonderful that you can, you know, go out with your friends and enjoy a beverage as well. But I know, like, there are a lot of alcoholics, though, that are like, we're not supposed to have mocktails because then it's sort of...
Yeah, it makes you think of it.
It's on your lips, right?
Yeah.
No, but I would be down with that. I mean, the biggest thing for me would be price point. If they were like, this is an awesome, cool watermelon thing for $4, I'm like, sold.
Yeah, but then if they're like, this is a, you know, come from the hills of Hawaii, and
it's $14.
I'm like, you know what, if it's $14, better make me. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. 773 says out of town visitors. Well, it depends.
It depends.
Who they are.
Yeah. 309 says us downstaters prefer to call it Central Time, not Chicago Time. That's a
pet peeve.
Because I say with Indiana, they go by Chicago Time. Sorry.
That was a little. That was a sore spot we had.
Yeah. 773 bridesmaid dresses.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen a good one.
Yeah.
Ever. And I drive trolleys for a living. Yeah. I've never seen a good bridesmaid.
Even when you
get
to choose the one you get, it's still awful. Uh-huh. I once bought one and it was $99, but the alterations were $175.
Oh, no.
Come on.
That's no good.
That's the worst.
This is a good one. 847. The worst is when you visit a doctor's or lawyer's office and they give you a key to use their bathroom and there's a stuffed animal attached to it.
Because what's on that stuffed animal?
That's married. No, that's so great.
It's like a teddy bear full of fecal matter.
We're really worried this key's going to get stolen,
right?
So you put a koala bear on there? Like, that seems so dumb.
Just put an old phone.
They
won't know.
I'm not concerned about the fecal matter part of it. I'm just concerned, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Why are you here? No faith in humanity that you're making a huge... You put a stuffed animal on the keychain?
Be better if they had to, like, roll something. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Wagon behind them.
You know?
773 says IRS notice from taxes due 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty.
I get that all the time. What's she worried about?
Yeah. You just ignore that. You just flush it down the toilet. Yeah, I never got it.
I flush everything.
Waking up a few minutes before your alarm goes off and having to wait for the inevitable.
Ooh, that is the worst.
That is the worst.
513 says, I would like to be a bus driver when he had a smell. Someone that told you he didn't take a bath for 6 months and he smells like dead cat. I work in Cincinnati. I don't know what's going on.
What?
That was an odd sentence.
Sorry.
I like you out there. But
sometimes you get halfway into the text and you're like, oh,
ew.
I shouldn't have started this.
Dead cat.
Especially towards the end and trying to get everything in. 847 says... the worst when you're in a two-lane road going 55 and the car at the cross street does a fast stop, pulls out in front of you, and then goes 40 miles per hour.
That is the worst.
I hate that person.
Or the people that think you're psychic and they don't use the turn signal, or that you know they're coming, but then they won't commit. And
there's a whole lot of no turn signal in this town, I've noticed.
Come on.
Yeah. I would say you probably have stories of a lot of cars trying to really taking advantage of the trolley.
Oh, well, you know, because I don't get mad, though, because we're going 2 miles an hour out there. If you want to zip around me, that's fine. I'll just make a joke about you and get more money from tips later.
Yeah.
You know? That's all.
But the worst, though, was when you'd be driving the free trolley back in the day, and the cab would just, like, pull in front of you, cut you off, and then slam on the brakes.
And then everyone falls down.
And then everybody, all you would hear is shopping bags, like, boom. And you're like, oh, everyone's going to die.
All right, we got some good stuff coming up here. 630, the worst people who collect wine corks.
That's
a good one.
Am I related to some of those people? I'm not sure.
This is a good one, man. The worst is when you mean to text your friend with benefits all the things you want to do, but accidentally text your boss.
Oh.
Who shares the same name. That could be real.
That could be, definitely. Yeah, I bet that happened to that person, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll put that on the list.
630 says, I know this happened to most of us. The worst is pulling into the ATM drive-thru, so you patiently wait, and then after 2, 3, 5 minutes or even more, the car finally just drives away in front of you.
What? Oh, I see. I'm picturing it. All right.
The worst is being nominated by your boss to do work carpool for your fellow coworker who has a couple of DUIs and a breathalyzer on his car.
No, he's fired. That guy's fired.
If he drives a trolley, yes.
Of course he
does it. You know,
this is the frame through which I'm viewing this.
Right.
That guy's fired. He can't come to my job.
That guy doesn't have more job for him.
Such a strange one.
The worst. Okay, I know we're getting closer to the end here, and I feel like we're in okay territory with the FCC. So I think this is dirty, but I'm not sure.
Oh, I love it.
The worst is when your esthetician has a grudge that you're late.
Mm-hmm.
It spites you by leaving half Brazilian done undone and charges you full.
Oh. That's a...
Yeah, that... A half a Brazilian seems like...
That's not a Brazilian, then.
No, well, no.
That's not a Brazilian.
But then you got charged for a Brazilian.
Is it like left side only?
Or, I don't know. Or maybe like
crevices
still.
Can we say crevices? We can say crevices, right?
Because the closer
once you get to after 10 o'clock. All right, I got some prizes to give away. We got the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. We got a pair of tickets to the Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo at April 21st and 22nd at Plumbers Hall in Chicago's West Loop. Sample artisan chocolates and food and see demos on wine and food pairings. Get tickets at chocolatewineandspiritsexpo.com. And, of course, a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right. Third place, going to get the desktop indoor weather station, is going to be 708, who says the worst is when you travel through Indiana and you try to figure out what time it is.
Yeah, there it is.
It is that, yeah.
It's not time to get ill.
Is it Chicago time? Okay.
Oh.
All right. Second place is going to get a pair of tickets to the Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo on April 21st and 22nd at Plumbers Hall. And that's going to go to Mary. The worst is when you visit a doctor or lawyer's office and they give you a key to use the bathroom and there's a stuffed animal attached to it.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
From now on, I'm just putting shovels.
There you go.
Put them to work.
And of course, the Lou Malnati's gift certificate is going to our first place tonight, 630. The worst is forgetting to record my favorite show and then having to watch it on demand and not being able to fast forward through all the political ads. That is
perfect
for right now.
Yes.
Chris Churchill, Amy Sumter, I can't thank you guys enough for playing the worst tonight. Amy is part of the Cates at the Bookseller. Chris is part of Sketch Catch Revolution up at Under the Gun. You guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Yeah.